The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have told you turn the other cheek. And they made it with a bat, fuck them protests in them cities. Told you go fight in the war, Vietnam, you died good riddance. That man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around and pump crack right up in your city. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. So one day you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
For those of you who don't know the pain, the government was slinging out them O's of cane, and bullets and propaganda was no cocaine. So on the same day that Hova came, Jay Ecky and his Minuteman raided Will.
Good afternoon and welcome to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind these enemy lines, known as USA Inc. Today's date is October 16th, 2015. It is a Friday afternoon, and I hope that my voice finds you safe and sound behind these enemy lines. Again, just keep some of our Black Talk Radio Network family members, anyone that you may know. I know quite a bit of people down there in South Carolina as they are still trying to recover from the floods. We had our brother Max Parthas call in yesterday. I think it's FEMA or whoever the authority is down there have condemned their home, and they have to get out of that home, and they have to start all over. Now, he said they're supposed to get some assistance from the government, but several of his friends reminded him that, you know, if y'all need assistance, if y'all start a fundraiser to help you out, to please let us know so that I'm sure many other listeners on Black Talk Radio Network would be willing to contribute whatever they can to help Max and his family start over. Again, you know, they were victims of the hurricane. What was it, Joaquin or something like that? I don't know. But anyway, yeah, the flood waters reached all the way up to his door. And thankfully, it didn't flood inside the house, but it flooded enough that they have condemned the house that he and his family was living in. So keep all those victims of this flood in your prayers, in your thoughts, because they have, many of them have lost everything. So always want to keep our family members in our prayers. Today, we do not have a guest scheduled for you today. I do have some guests in mind that I'm hoping we will be able to get to come on next week. But today, I'm just going to share some stories with you along the social and political lines. And, of course, as always, I'm going to provide some commentary. I got plenty to talk about. I got an opinion on just about everything. Not everything, but just about everything. And I certainly don't mind coming on these airwaves and sharing my opinion with you. Now, in the news, some of the things that I decided that I wanted to discuss with you today. Before I get that, let me give out the phone number. The conference line is 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032#. That's 549032#. And just hit star 61 anytime you want to comment. That'll like put a little symbol beside your phone number, and it'll let me know that you want to comment. You can also use the web-based flash phone to call from anywhere on the planet, as long as you have an internet connection or a pair of headsets. Well, I should say and or a pair of headsets. You can also hit me up on the studio line at 704. Let me make sure it's open. 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030. Now, some of the things that I would like to share with you today that is in the news. One of them is not really in the news. It has been published on Black Talk Radio Network, but I filed what you might call a battlefield report, a report from the field, from behind these enemy lines, that has to do with my local county where I live. There was a Confederate flagger who got fired from one of the manufacturing plants here in the area that I live in. They manufacture trucks. President Obama actually came here in 2012 because they manufacture trucks that use natural gas, and he gave an energy policy speech at this plant. I have several family members that work at this plant, and while I'm not saying where I got my information from, this is a little small town. Pretty much everybody know each other, or they know somebody that knows somebody, you know. So, you know, it's not like we're in a big city with millions of people or anything like that. No, this is a little small country town where everybody may know your name, as they say. And so anyway, this Confederate flagger got fired from his job after he was found with a firearm in his truck. And the reason that he was found or fired with this firearm in his truck was because you had some employees who became suspicious of his activity, and they were vigilant. They did their own surveillance, and upon discovering this weapon, they alerted the right people, and this person was arrested. No, he wasn't arrested. I'm sorry. They don't arrest terrorists. Well, sometimes they do. But anyway, he wasn't arrested, but he was escorted off of the plant grounds. So I guess they allowed him to get in his truck and leave. But he was escorted out the door of the plant. All right. So I want to provide some information on that and why I think that story is important. Unfortunately, a lot of people do not seem to think that the story is important, and I'm not complaining about this. I'm just making an observation, because I'm sure if I had put up something with a title that said 15 black people got shot down in a plant by a racist white supremacist, I bet you that article would probably have been shared 100,000 times by now. But since there were no fatalities, a bunch of black people did not get killed, well, that's not really newsworthy. We only want to report, you know, the news or make a big deal out of something when somebody actually does become a victim of one of these terrorists. All right. So, yeah, I think that story is important in terms of the steps that you should take or how you should be conducting yourself behind these enemy lines. So definitely want to talk to you about that. Also, this is a story that came out over the past couple of days. I first read it yesterday, but I wanted to share it with you on air today. It's just so many angles I could tackle this story from, but presidential hopeful, I don't know if he really has any true hope of actually getting the Republican nomination. I think he just likes the attention and whatnot, and that's the only time he really becomes relevant or anybody is paying, you know, much attention to him. But you had a presidential hopeful and Christian minister, Mike Huckabee, agreeing with an Iowa radio host, and yes, it was podcasted, but this Iowa radio host, him and Mike Huckabee, they were in agreement that slavery should be used to punish poor people who get caught stealing. Now, too many times, you know, people, we look at these people and we say, that's just crazy. That's crazy talk. And indeed, they may be insane, because I believe anybody that practices racism and white supremacy, I don't see that as being normal, even though a lot of people may practice it. When you look at the total population numbers of white people, and every white person ain't a white supremacist, but when you look at their total population numbers, they are, I don't even know if they make up 1% of the world population. All right. But they do have a lot of power. They do have a lot of power, and we might think that what they're saying is crazy. But we should be paying attention and not dismiss it as being, oh, this is just crazy talk. Let's not pay it any mind or anything like that. You know, don't people just crazy. They just say the dumbest things. And so let's not give them any attention. No, you should be paying them attention. All right. Cause, you know, some people, all they do is talk. But some people actually do put some action behind their words. And so you should never dismiss any potential white supremacist terrorists. And we know Mike Huckabee is a white supremacist. All right. So we shouldn't be dismissing what he and this radio host in Iowa said. Now, I don't know how big the audience is of this radio host out there in Iowa, but I imagine lots of people in that area of behind these enemy lines is listening to him. And they probably in full agreement with him. I'm not sure on New Abolitionist Radio if we gotten to Iowa yet in the America, Ferguson is America series. But I just know from research and whatnot that Iowa is a predominantly white state, but their prison slave population is predominantly black. All right. Very small percentage of black people actually live in Iowa, but somehow they make up the majority of the people in prison. And I don't think it's because they are predisposed to crime or anything like that. No, that's just BS. No, what it is they live in under a system of racism, white supremacy, and they are targeted for the slave plantation. And so that's why they don't have that many black people living within the borders, but you know, they certainly was able to find enough of them that they were able to fill up their prisons with them. So anyway, this is the only thing that's crazy is if you believe that what Mike Huckabee and this Iowa radio host is proposing isn't already happening, because they're already punishing poor people with slavery. Now, I'm not just talking about the general, you know, population. I'm not just talking about, all right, you got caught with so-called, quote-unquote, illegal substance. You got over an ounce of weed. I'm going to have to arrest you, take you to jail, get a conviction, put you on a plantation somewhere. No, they actually, different cities and whatnot, have been passing laws to criminalize the homelessness. Poor people. Yeah, and we have talked about on New Abolitionist Radio, reported stories of that nature, and how this is a trend. And it's not just happening here in the border, within the borders of USA Inc. It's happening in a number of different countries. All right, so I definitely want to share that story with you. Mike Huckabee, presidential hopeful, Christian minister, talking about, hey, let's put people in prison who get caught stealing. These poor people, yeah, I'm a Christian. I don't believe in feeding them. You know, I believe in putting them in prison. We'll feed them once they get in prison. You know, whatever. Anyway, another story that I want to share with you. There's another high-profile white supremacist suspect who probably believes in practicing slavery, just like Mike Huckabee and that conservative Iowa radio host. But Ann Coulter on Twitter, she hasn't responded to anything that I've tweeted at her or anyone else who's been involved in, let's just call it a conversation or whatnot, about a tweet she made suggesting that no one, or she's hard pressed to find one person who has been arrested or jailed for smoking pot. Just for smoking pot. Which is kind of a dumb question, because really they don't put you in prison for smoking weed. You know, cause like if you go fail a drug test or something like that, they don't call the police and arrest you and turn that drug test, that failed drug test over to the police so that they can get a prosecution cause you've been smoking weed. No, they don't lock up people for smoking weed. No, they arrest you and lock you up for possessing weed. So it's kind of a dumb question to begin with. All right. And quite a few of the comments in response to what she said is the typical banter that you hear from non-thinking, you know, people. Who want to play that partisan game of talking about liberals this and liberals that. I mean, if you've seen one conservative conversation, you've seen them all pretty much. You know, it's not like you're going to be blown away with their intellectual capacity and these logical arguments or anything like that. No, what you're going to hear is a bunch of name calling and a bunch of things quoted as facts that in fact are not facts, and just a bunch of garbage, man. But anyway, she was on The View. I don't know if this was yesterday. I don't know if it was today. I don't know what time The View comes on. I don't watch The View or anything like that. You know, The View with Raven Simone on there, Whoopi Goldberg, and they replaced a couple of the hosts that was on there, and so I don't know even who all is on there. I just know those two black people are on there. So anyway, she was on The View to hawk her latest book, probably full of hate, probably pushing racism and white supremacy. In fact, I know it is, just judging from the title. And anyway, she was on The View to push her latest book. And she mentioned her pride in being a descendant of settlers, who were not immigrants, according to Ann Coulter. They no, don't call her ancestors immigrants. They were settlers. Yeah, that's what they were. They were settlers on this continent. They were not immigrants or anything like that. And so I want to play that clip because, you know, we need to know what these white people were saying. I remember Sister Sherrod Ali, I think that's her name, how you pronounce her name, I'm not sure. I haven't seen her on television, but again, I don't watch a whole lot of corporate news, just some. If someone is going to be of interest and I find out about it, or they're going to be talking about something that's of interest to me, then I'll tune in if I hear about it. But I don't watch it that much, so I don't know if she's been a guest on any of these programs or not. But Sister Shiraz Ali said that we need, you know, white races, especially white males, on television, so that other people can see that black people ain't unjustifiably paranoid about these people. You know, so we need them on television. So yeah, in that same vein, we need to pay attention to what these people say. You know, it's a part of intelligence gathering. All right. Now, last but not least, now I touched upon this when was this? Wednesday night, I believe. Wednesday night on New Abolitionist Radio. But I want to talk about it a little bit more today. Minister Louis Farrakhan, in some of his remarks at the Justice or Else rally that occurred last weekend, he told some of those in attendance and, of course, those watching on the video feed, because, you know, when this first was brought to my attention by a listener, I had some people who I'm assuming were members of the Nation of Islam saying, he didn't say that, and I was there, and if you wasn't there, you don't need to say, you can't say nothing, you know. Well, no, there, it was video fed out to the entire planet through their website, what was it, the justiceorelse.com website. The entire world could tune into the video stream, and they knew everybody wasn't going to be able to come, and that's why they set it up so that other people could watch it on video. Now, so, you know, let's just silence that nonsense right now. But in his comments, the minister told people to do some homework. Now, he told you to do something. He asked you to do something. He said to do some homework regarding Thomas Jefferson, who the minister said, and I quote, one of the most brilliant of the founding fathers of this country. All right. So I did my homework. Plus, I already knew a lot about Thomas Jefferson from my own study of history and whatnot, and especially in terms of slavery in this country. So I took it upon myself to do some more homework. What is it that the minister wants me to find out about this white supremacist racist that he says is one of the most brilliant founding fathers of this country? Now, what I found was that some new research that somebody else had published, and I came across that research. Again, I share some of this on New Abolitionist Radio, but I'm going to share it again because everybody don't listen to New Abolitionist Radio. But upon further research, I came across the research of a historian, and according to this historian, Thomas Jefferson was more vile, more despicable, more evil than what I already knew about the man. I mean, I already knew some things about him and how evil and nasty he was, but I did not know the things that this researcher found. And so, yeah, I want to talk about my homework assignment from Minister Farrakhan on Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson, I view him just like Lincoln and whatnot, because I did discover Jefferson was considered an abolitionist at one time. But like Lincoln, a future CEO of America, that he was a fraud in terms of being an abolitionist. He wasn't really no abolitionist because Lincoln didn't never abolish slavery. All right. So, I mean, just a liar, man, a liar, a trickster, just a big old giant fraud. And even a abolitionist, and I just found out about this abolitionist because we try to profile those people on New Abolitionist Radio, just, you know, to find out their stories and to show people that, no, we're not going to excuse George Washington. We're not going to excuse Thomas Jefferson's practice of slavery. It's just, that's just something they did during their time. And, you know, it's a different time now. We know it was wrong. But back then, they didn't see it as being wrong. That's a doggone lie. That's a doggone lie. And you will hear that lie from the apologists of these evil, vile, despicable, and I hesitate to even call them human beings. They were animals. All right. But even during their time, there was abolitionists. There were people who saw it as being an evil institution. And I mean, even Jefferson, his own words, his own writings, he thought it to be evil and against nature and all this and that. But I don't care what you write. I don't care about what you say. It's about what you do. And this man did nothing. And he was called out by the abolitionists. At least one abolitionist during his day called Moncure Conway, who looked upon Jefferson as a fraud. Just like we tell you in terms of Lincoln, when everybody talk about Lincoln freed the slaves, and oh, that's a lie. That man was a great deceiver. And his descendants and all those who looked up to him and worship him and all this and that, they've been perpetuating his fraud, lying to everybody that slavery was abolished when in fact it was only amended in this country. So those are some of the news items that I would like to share with you today. If you have any comments, any questions, please don't hesitate to add to the conversation. Again, the phone number for the conference line is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-pound. Those already dialed in, just hit *61. And that will alert me. You can also hit me up on the studio line. The studio line is 704 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030. Let me close some of these windows before my PC starts to lock up on me, because I got too many windows open. So let me shut some of those down as I pull up my battlefield report for you from the area that I live in, known as Gaston County. And we're behind these enemy lines, surrounded by many enemies, many Confederate flag wavers, descendants of Ku Klux Klanners, and all of that kind of garbage. So this is my report. Again, I'm using anonymous sources. This is a story that's not being reported here where we live. The Gastonia Gazette has not, as of yet, picked up this story. I haven't seen any outlets out of Charlotte pick up the story, and it could be they don't know about it. I don't know, but I know about it because I know people that work there, and they told me about it. And they don't wish to be identified, so I'm going to honor their request and just make this an anonymous report. So this is the article or the battlefield report that I shared today on BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. But according to these anonymous employees, a white male was fired from the Daimler truck plant, which is located in Mount Holly, North Carolina, after a firearm was discovered in his truck, which was parked in the employee parking lot, which is prohibited. All right, so he was breaking the rules, right? Sources tell me, of course, tell Black Talk Radio, that a white male started flying a huge Confederate flag from the back of his personal truck at the truck manufacturing plant. The attention that he attracted to himself led to vigilant employees taking the initiative to surveil the potential terrorist, which led to the discovery of the firearm in the truck parked on the plant grounds. Now, just for some background, during the not so recent debates that was occurring in South Carolina after the murder of the Emmanuel Nine, and also, which also included the assassination of a sitting state senator, South Carolina Senator Reverend Clemente Pinckney. That was an assassination. All right. He picked that church out for a reason, because he passed a bunch of churches, black churches, on his way to that one. And we know that he's only been charged with first degree murder and not with terrorism, because we live in a system of racism and white supremacy. I don't care how many black people become the CEO of America, or how many black people become U.S. Attorney General. I don't care how many black people become U.S. attorneys. I don't care how many black people you got in the FBI or in state law enforcement or anywhere. All right. They operating on a code. OK. And that code is based in white supremacy, the myth of white supremacy. So it should come as no surprise that this terrorist, in fact, has not been charged as a terrorist. So anyway, it was during that debate that was going on, and we saw the sister from Charlotte. I think her name is Bree Newsom. And then also our brother Max Parthas was on the ground. We had some Black Lives Matter local people there in South Carolina was also at the rally to take down that flag, that Confederate flag, and confront them Klan terrorists who happen to be from North Carolina. But during that whole time period, I was told that all of those white suspected racists at this truck plant had a coordinated event where they all came in wearing their Confederate flag t-shirts and whatnot. I mean, they coordinated this thing. White people love practicing terrorism. And that's what I heard John Sims call an artist. He also made the Burn and Bury the Confederate flag video, and he was having demonstrations across the nation, and but he called it visual terrorism. It is. It's to let you know I don't like you, I believe in racism and white supremacy, and I will put you in slavery just like my ancestors did. In fact, we are putting you in slavery today. But see, they don't know that. They too think that slavery is a thing of the past and whatnot and all of that. But that's what they did. They felt so strong about it that they showed up on the job wearing their t-shirts. And that was at the point I told my family member, and I have several family members that work there, but I told one of them, see, now they have identified themselves. I was like, take notes, write down names so that, you know, you'll know what this person is really thinking about you and whatnot. They can smile in your face and appear to be so helpful and all of that. But in reality, they hate your dang gone guts, and they would love to see you hanging from a tree. So make sure, you know, that you watch yourself around these people. Don't even talk around them. Don't participate in no conversations with them or whatnot. Just, you know, just be quiet. If you have to, if you're forced to be in the same location as they are, then just be observant and take notes. Don't even engage in any meaningless conversations with them. All right. Because they already let you know what they're about. All right, so I'm just giving you some background on where we live, where this plant is, which President Obama visited the plant in 2012. I remember that. I remember that distinctly when he came to Mount Holly, North Carolina, to visit this plant because it makes commercial trucks that run on natural gas, and you know he's been pushing alternative energy and whatnot. Also, to give you some more background, Gaston County was among several counties. It wasn't like all of North Carolina. While North Carolina, the entire state, did vote to secede from the Union, all of the counties were not Confederate counties. And a number of the counties, including black people, fought for the Union during the Civil War. From North Carolina, but this county that we live in Cleveland County, which adjoins Gaston County, they proud of the 1500 people that they sent to fight you know, against those who they said was trying to overthrow racism and white supremacy. Nothing was happening of the sort, or who were going to try to end the institution of slavery. That was never Lincoln's intentions. We got his letters to that Georgia congressman to prove that. But, you know, these people ain't big on facts. They ain't big on reading or anything like that. If they just perceive a threat, you know, they ready to overreact. They ready to react to it. All right. So doing, again, research on my own family in an area of the world that I live in, I found out that the majority of white people that lived in this county prior to the Civil War were dirt doggone poor. All right. It was only about 300 or so families that actually owned any enslaved Africans. I shouldn't say that. They enslaved Africans. Let's put it that way. And they had papers that they said gave them ownership rights over these people. So it was only 300 families in Gaston County. And then there were no large plantations or anything like that around here. I think the biggest farm around here, they had like 20 enslaved Africans, you know, a slaving on the plantation for them to put money in their pockets and whatnot. But the thing is, though, even though the majority, well, all of the white people that went to fight did not own, the rich white folks that actually was enslaving Africans, hell no. You think they sent their sons and daughters to fight? Nah, maybe one or two, you know, and they might have been officers or something like that. But the vast majority of the white people that fought in the Civil War, I should say the white races that fought in the Civil War, actually did not enslave anybody. But they had a dream that one day they could enslave an African, you know, so that they could rape them at their leisure and make them work, and, you know, so that they could sit back and be lazy and all of that. And so that's the background of this county that we live in. So I'm not going to say who they were. Let's just say these employees. When these employees saw that and they were being vigilant. And then all of a sudden this guy, cause he wasn't flying his little Confederate flag off the back of his truck before. And, you know, they said that they just noticed, they noticed it in the parking lot and was like, you know, what's up with this big giant oversized flag flying off the back of this truck? Now, I mean, that's not something odd to see here, but they said, you know, this guy wasn't really known to do anything like that. See, that's why I'm saying, man, a lot of these people, they undercover racist, man, and whatnot. And so they said that they felt like, you know, that him bringing that flag to work and flying it so proudly off the back of his truck that, you know, maybe we ought to keep an eye on this guy. And that's what they did. And so some of those employees who were probably in fear for their life, given the history of racism around here, and I'm not talking about racism that occurred when the Ku Klux Klan was so active in North Carolina, but recent racism, because and terrorism. And so they were afraid for their lives, possibly another Dylan Roof want to run up in a place and shoot up a bunch of unarmed, defenseless people. So they started keeping this guy, watching this guy. And then somebody started looking in his truck. And when they looked in his truck, they saw a firearm in his truck. Now, it's against the rules. It's against the standard operating procedures for the Daimler plant to bring firearms on the premises, right? So that's a violation right there. So what they did was they went to management and they filed a report. So the people from HR came down, looked in the man's truck, saw the firearm, called security, called a man in the office, fired him, and security escorted him to his truck, which I think was kind of stupid. All right, I think you should have called the police to come escort this guy, because he could have just got in the truck and pulled his gun out and started shooting anyway. You know, why would you escort him to a truck that you know got a firearm in it? No, somebody else, you know, we gonna call the police so they can handle the firearm. They can retrieve the firearm. You can go down to the station and pick up your property later if it's legally owned and licensed or whatnot. But yeah, that's what they should have done. As I think about it now, you know, why would you allow him to go back to his truck and he got the gun, you know? But anyway, they got him off the premises. Thankfully, there was no loss of life. Then a bunch of black people did not get killed or shot up because guess what? They had battlefield awareness. They were paying attention. They knew their surroundings. They knew from when Dylan Roof did what he did and when, you know, all those black people and other people who thought it was incorrect to be flying that flag on the State House Capitol grounds down there in South Carolina. And they showed up to work in mass with their Confederate t-shirts on. So we know what these people are. We know where we live. We know that we are in the hot pocket of white supremacy and terrorism. We know they got monuments to the Confederacy at the courthouse and at the voting place where we go to vote and whatnot. So they knew. We got to watch these people. We got to watch them. We can't be slacking up and thinking that we safe because we on the job and it's a fence around the plant and they got guards and whatnot and security strolling through the plant. No. We not going to leave our security to somebody else who may or may not, you know, care about whether we die or live. So, you know, hats off to those people for showing or exhibiting battlefield awareness and not just overlooking this guy, but becoming very suspicious because you noticed this, you know, he had never done this before. Why is he doing it now? And so you go and you do your intelligence gathering and you watch him and you look in his vehicle and you see there it is right there. There's the gun. Yo, he's violated the rules. Now we can get rid of him. Way to go. That was a constructive act, I felt like. And they didn't even have to allege, you know, racism. They ain't had to use the R word. They didn't have to say this suspected racist, this white supremacist, this don't even make it about the flag. And from what I heard, they didn't. They ain't say nothing about the flag. Well, they did say that they, you know, felt kind of suspicious that he brought the flag, started flying the flag and all of that. But they didn't mention none of that. No. They knew it was against the rules to bring a firearm onto the premises. And so by their astute observation, they was able to see a fireable offense. And now the guy's gone, which again, now I'm saying, and I'm telling my people, you know, we got to be on high alert, because now we got an unemployed racist suspect white supremacist out there, and he's probably angry that he lost his job. So we got to be ever vigilant, make sure that he don't run up on none of us trying to take out his revenge or whatnot because his white supremacist rights were violated. Y'all know how them people think and whatnot. So yeah, we on high alert around here. And as I also posted in that story, there have been a number of incidents that have occurred in this county. You had some white racists at a Walmart in their trucks with their Confederate flags. When a group of black teen boys came walking through the parking lot, they started revving up their engines and, you know, being demonstrative. And the boys didn't say any, if they called them any names or anything like that. But they said they were unnerved by that. And so they was like, you know, let's get home. Let's run. And so they ran home. And they said that these men in the truck started chasing them with their Confederate flags waving, and they were able to make it home. And they called the police, and the Gastonia police came out and said, we'll take the report, but there's no crime. No crime has been committed here. There's no crime, even though a crime, you know, according to North Carolina law, you just can't menace people. That's called menacing. You know, you can't be intimidating people like that. You can't be chasing people. That's called stalking. Menacing and stalking are both laws that are on the books here in North Carolina. But these white cops didn't want to arrest their, you know, potential white supremacist terrorists. I know they white supremacist terrorists. Don't nobody fly that doggone flag but terrorists. White supremacist terrorists. That's who fly that flag. So ain't no suspect, ain't no, I guess they are or whatever, you know, in terms of codification. If you repping that, then you confirming for me that you a white supremacist. So I don't have to call you a racist suspect. I'll just call you what you are. All right. And so they probably didn't want to arrest none of their white supremacist cousins or brothers or sisters or anybody in their family member. Hell, they probably meet with them on the weekends at a secret cross burning or something, who knows. But they certainly weren't interested in prosecuting or any white people for terrorizing little black boys. And so then about a week or so after that, then you had a white male and a white female in a truck, in a Jeep truck, same difference, flying a Confederate flag, rolled up into a predominantly black community in Gastonia, North Carolina, which is in Gaston County, rolled up in there, and some unknown persons, they still ain't found out. And this happened like back in June or July. They never arrested anyone. Good. I'm glad they didn't. But anyway, he rolls up in this black community. I don't know what his intentions were. But I imagine it had gotten around town, cause that did show up on the news about them chasing them little black boys. So when they rolled up in this black community, they're saying that up to three black men started firing on his truck and chased them out the community, and said that they almost even shot the woman, you know, cause it hit inside of the truck and what, shot out the back window and all of that. Now, the initial story, I think some of these people making it up. The initial story, the guy said he didn't know who did it. And we even played his 911 call on there. He said he didn't know. He said he saw some people sitting on the porch And then next thing you know, he being shot at and whatnot. He didn't name any racial classification. He didn't give a description, didn't say what they were wearing. But some of the articles published on some of these right wing sites after that claimed it was three black men. I live here. I have not heard of anyone being arrested, anyone being prosecuted for that. You know, and so there have been things happening here behind these enemy lines in Gaston County. And so it's not like, you know, this incident, this recent incident with this former worker at the Daimler truck plant. Yeah, it's not an isolated incident. It's not isolated. Now, I can't say for certain that man planned on running up in there and shooting anyone, but guess what? Guess what? He didn't. It didn't happen that day because black people were vigilant. I shouldn't have said that, but yeah. Employees were vigilant. And they ended up getting him escorted off the premises. And we hope he will never return to those premises. So, anyway, that's one of the stories that I wanted to share with you because I think it's just very important, people. I don't be saying stuff on this program just to be saying it. There's a method to my madness, and I mean it when I say we live in Battlefield America. We live behind enemy lines, and you need to have battlefield awareness, and you need to have battlefield skills so that you won't become a victim. And because these people had battlefield awareness, because they did not just think nothing of it and thought it was a very serious something that was happening there, and they decided to do further investigation. And now who knows how many lives they may have saved. Again, we can't say for certain this man planned to shoot anyone, but we do know that he wasn't supposed to have a gun, and he knew he wasn't supposed to have a gun on the plant grounds. And why all of a sudden he want to start, you know, flying this big giant flag off the back of his truck? Who knows? Why give him a chance? Why even give him a chance? So that's why I thought that story was important. The next story that I want to jump to, we don't seem to have anybody who has any commentary or anything that they want to share on the conference line or the studio line. So I'm going to take a break, and then when I come back, I want to discuss presidential hopeful and Christian minister Mike Huckabee agreeing with an Iowa radio host that slavery should be used to punish poor people who are caught stealing. As if that ain't already happening. See, they just, man, I tell you, man. And I suspect that Mike Huckabee, he knows exactly what's going on. He's a former governor. I don't think Arkansas, I could be incorrect, but I don't think Arkansas has a private prison operating in the state of Arkansas, but I do know they've been talking about it. I do know they got overcrowding. I do know them prisoners ain't just sitting behind bars playing basketball and watching TV as they like to make you think. And I know it's slavery being practiced in that state. So anyway, Mike Huckabee knows slavery was never abolished. You know, he can play dumb like a lot of people play dumb. I don't know if they really are that dumb. That's just, you know, it's just shameful that you don't even know much about your own so-called founding documents and your constitution and what it says and all of that. So, yeah, we're going to take a break and we'll come back. We'll talk about that story. Just some network news. Of course, Brother Dave and Tando Radio Show will not be airing live today as he's in the midst of a move. And he's taking Fridays to, you know, really focus in on getting some things done to make that move. And so he won't be on air today. As far as I know, what's today? Friday. Yeah, today's Friday. Race Treaty Radio is scheduled on Fridays at 9:00 p.m. Eastern Time. And then the Lotus Place comes on at 10:00 p.m. Eastern Time. All right. So you're listening to Black Talk Radio News right now. And I broadcast every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday at 4:00 p.m. right here on the Black Talk Radio Network. So stay tuned. We'll play some message music and come back and listen to what Mike Huckabee and this Iowa radio host had to say about poor people and slavery.
This is Ron Hayes with Hood News, and you're listening to the Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned.
This is Monroe, North Carolina, the town where local NAACP president Robert Williams created headlines when he said, "Sometimes violence must be met with violence." Many asked why.
You know, we do whatever we do to survive.
Right? Drop it!
Some of the people who had thought that it would be better to settle these cases violently, I had been able to persuade them that we should use the courts and go into the courts. So this thing had boomeranged. And I was being held responsible for having brought these cases to court.
There was a trial where a Negro maid had been kicked down a flight of stairs by a white man, and that this man hadn't even bothered to come to his own trial, and that he had also been acquitted. And there was a demonstration as a result of this in the courtroom by the Negro women of the community. And they had approached me and had said, "Well, you said that you would see that these people would be punished because through the organization we would have competent counsel, and that if it hadn't been for you, that these people would have been punished." And they wanted to know what I would recommend that they do from then on. And so I recommended that they meet violence with violence, that Negroes must be prepared to repulse attack, that they must be willing to fight, that they must be willing to die and to kill if necessary, that there was no law, no 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution of equal protection in the South, and that therefore they didn't have any deterrent, so they would have to create the deterrent force themselves by meeting violence with violence.
Magdalene. And all her sins are cleansed through the camera lens. But
then again, maybe I'm just rambling. Line up these industry CEOs and let me battle them. Show Jimmy Iovine the crime scene with his senseless reverend and tell him signees. And when I hear sirens, disconnect his neck from his spine clean. The difference my spitting is the equivalent of using your high beams. All I want is you and your mind free. The time needs way more than a nice beat in the rhyme scheme. Cause all that bitch all y'all talking don't fertilize seeds. I heard it takes two chains to make a slave. One on your physical frame and one on your brain. And once they got your mental enslaved, it runs like a train. So what are you really saying when you claim you stuck in the game? See, they create corporations cause they never wanted fame. So the nigga that you see is the nigga that's underpaid. Damn, just another slave. I'm John Jacques Dessalines. I swing him up with a blade X.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Speaking of Time for Awakening, which is a program that airs on the Black Talk Radio Network every Sunday at 7 o'clock p.m. based in Philadelphia, PA. And yesterday's guest, James Klingman, we brought him on to discuss among some of the things that we discussed yesterday was a training session, a leadership training session for the 1 million Black conscious voters and contributors. You can find out more information at IamOneOfTheMillion.com, IamOneOfTheMillion.com. That training session is taking place over the next 2 days in that area, Philadelphia. And again, you can find out more information. Today was day one. Tomorrow will be day two. If you are not a member of I Am One of the Million, you still can go and find out more information if it's in your local area, if you're up in the Philadelphia, PA area. So you can find out more about what the organization is about, what its goals are, and whether or not you want to be a part of that. Now, you do have to be a conscious Black person. So if you are unconscious and whatnot, then, you know, this probably won't be for you. But who knows? You might be on your way to consciousness. So, you know, we definitely want to support the spread of consciousness among our people. You heard in the message music, you heard from one of the, great men from North Carolina. That is Mr. Williams, Robert Williams. Meeting violence with violence. He certainly didn't sit back and let these Klan members just shoot up their house and terrorize the community. No, he started a Black self-defense force called the Black Guard. And so read up on that history in the book Negro with Guns. That was the other message music we heard from was Jossiri X, New Nat Turners. New Nat Turners. All right, let's jump to this story about Mike Huckabee. Mike Huckabee thinks it's a great idea that this Iowa radio host had, who said that, you know, I think we should put people who get caught stealing, poor people who get caught stealing, we should put them in prison, man. We should sell them into slavery. No, those were what he said, not put them in prison, sell them into slavery. But see, I know prison is the new plantation. So, you know, same thing to me. Anyway, let's listen to the comments. Let me pull those up for you. I'm on the wrong page. Let me close this out. Let's pull this page up. It was published on thinkprogress.org. It was written, article was written by Scott Keys that says, Huckabee suggests poor people should be sold into slavery for stealing. Now, I got some issues with what Scott Keys wrote. I'm sure he fancies himself a progressive and whatnot. And, you know, he's a writer. He has his little bio and whatnot. But Mr. Keys seems to think that slavery was abolished as well. But we'll get to him later. All right, but this is Mike Huckabee talking to this Iowa radio host. Let me see if I can get this guy's name. He was on a program talking about the criminal justice system. This program was on Mickelson in the Morning, which is described as a leading Iowa radio program. So again, you know, lots of people tuning in to these people talking about, let's start selling people into slavery. All right. Jan Mickelson, that's spelled J-A-N, Jan Mickelson. This is the guy whose program, who was really the one who was pushing the ideal of putting people into slavery, poor people who get caught stealing, cause it's in the Bible. It's in the Bible and whatnot. So yeah, this is Mike Huckabee, a Christian minister, getting down with Jan Mickelson, a conservative radio host, talking about, let's put people into slavery.
Our criminal justice system is taken over by progressives, mm-hmm. just like our failed government education system has been. And they've turned it into sort of a combination a criminal store, where we store people we don't want around us for years, and we bill the taxpayers for that. But there was a woman here in Iowa that went for a job, and she became a bookkeeper at a Creston, Iowa car dealership. And then she ripped them off about $425,000 worth of bookkeeping errors.
And that's a lot of cars.
Yes, it is. That must be very. It previously was, until they encountered her, it was seemed to be in the black. But they're going to make her shocking thing. They're going to make her pay the money back. Can you believe that? They want her to pay restitution.
Well, how very tacky of them to expect her to be responsible for the money that she stole from them.
And they're going to trade, and they're still going to send her to jail for 20 years. Now, I'm thinking the jails are a pagan invention. I was reading from Exodus to the listeners during the last segment, is that if a person steals, they have to pay it back, maybe twofold, fourfold. Mm-hmm. If they don't have anything, we're supposed to take them down and sell them. That's what it says in Exodus. We sell them, and we take, and they are indentured. That's what the 13th Amendment says for criminal restitution. We indenture them, and they have to spend their time not sitting on their stump in a jail cell. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be working off the debt. Wouldn't that be a better choice?
Well, it really would be. And look, my prison director in Arkansas used to say, and I quote him often, we lock a lot of people up because we're mad at them, not because we're afraid of them.
Yes.
And we need to lock people up we're afraid of. But sometimes the best way to deal with a nonviolent criminal behavior is what you just suggested. Make them pay back. Yeah. Pay back more than they stole. Let it be an example, but taking them out of the community, you know, even a
restitution isn't punishment. That's what they owe. They don't owe society.
That's
they don't
right.
have a debt to society. They owe the person they've damaged.
That's exactly right. Pay that back and live with the stigma of that. I mean, that's a certain deterrent. I mean, I think people.
All right, so I couldn't believe they mentioned the 13th Amendment. That was my first time listening to it. In its entirety as well. But I did read some transcripts. Talking about that's what the Constitution said. That's what the 13th, involuntary servitude and whatnot. But they're taking it out of context. All right. So they want to put people into slavery. This stuff about a pagan invention, unless they are, now in terms of the United States, in terms of other places in the world, I don't know. I'm sure they had jails and whatnot. Yeah, they had jails and prisons and stuff, in England, you know, prior to the European invasion of this continent. But they also was shipping them off to, let's say, Australia. I don't know what it was called at the time. I don't know what indigenous people call that island and whatnot. But I mean, that was a prison colony, and they also had prison colonies, that they established here on the North American continent. Again, I don't know what this continent was called. We're so dominated by white supremacy in our language that we are calling things the things that they named it, and we don't know the true name. So we can be forgiven if we don't know. All right, but that's something I need to research. What was this place called before it was called North America? What did the indigenous people call it? And so I don't think, I don't know why he would say that that's a pagan invention. I know here in terms of jails and prisons here in behind the enemy lines of USA Inc., that was an invention of the, what do they call those people? They're mostly in Pennsylvania. They're a religious sect. Quakers, yeah. Quakers. The Quakers came up with the first prisons here, and they even invented solitary confinement here on the continent. Now, I'm sure that solitary confinement was happening before the Quakers came here and whatnot, you know, because they would separate the enslaved Africans. If you had an enslaved African who was rebellious and you was worried about him starting a mutiny on the slave ship on his way over here, they would isolate them people. They put them in solitary confinement. Get them away from everybody else before they get everybody else talking about some rebelling against slavery and all this and that. So, again, man, when you're dealing with conservatives, I don't know if they are really as uneducated as they seem to be in terms of even knowing their own history. But a lot of times they practice in deception. So they may know these things, but it doesn't fit their agenda. So they ain't never had a problem with lying to people and whatnot. All right. So this is a conversation being had on a radio station that is heard in Iowa that was called a leading radio program, Mickelson in the Morning. And they're talking about you looking at the Bible and talking about the book of Exodus and saying if a person steals, they have to pay it back twofold, fourfold. Well, how come USA Inc. ain't paid? That this a Christian nation, and y'all believe in all paying restitution. Where the reparations at? You know what I'm saying? Where, you know, you stole all them people from the continent of Africa. You stole all this land here. All right? You stole land. You stole lives. Where are you gonna pay restitution? That's what the Bible say, right? That you, when you steal, that you are supposed to pay it back, what, twofold, fourfold? I actually think it says sevenfold. Don't quote me directly on that. I've read the Bible about 8 or 9 times in my lifetime, and I pretty much have scriptures embedded in my hair, in my head. I'm sorry, in my head. I know that book. All right, I'm no stranger to it. And whatnot. And I actually think it says you have to pay it back sevenfold. All right. So David Cameron, they want to go to Jamaica and tell them to put this reparation talk out of their minds and whatnot. Well, your great grandfather, great great grandfather was a slaver, acquired a tremendous amount of wealth. The Bible say you supposed to pay that back, man. You supposed to pay that back. You need to be looking for the descendants of the people that your great grandfather, whoever your ancestor was, I'm sure it was a white male, but he needs to, you need to make restitution to those victims. It don't say the debt go away once you pass away, once you dead and whatnot. No, usually that debt is passed on to your family. You don't just get out of your bills cause you die. All right. Yeah, no, you got to pay, you got to settle those debts. When a person dies and they got a bunch of bills, they don't get to keep, the family doesn't get to keep the property. They don't get it. Like say, for example, you still paying for a house and you die. Well, your family members don't get to keep the house and no longer pay for it. It's just going to be a gift and you don't owe that debt no more because that person's dead and you're not that person. No, you got to pay that debt. So, you know, in terms of reparations, but again, I don't like to talk about reparations unless I talk about the crime of slavery is still ongoing. They never stopped it. They never stopped it. And so for these idiots to sit up here and say, I shouldn't name call, but anyway, for these men to make these idiotic comments suggesting that people are not being put into slavery, it's just asinine. It's ridiculous. I don't know if it's they making these comments out of ignorance or because they're trying to be so deceptive and promote that narrative that slavery was abolished in 1865 by the with the passage of the 13th Amendment. But the 13th Amendment says, and I know it by heart, involuntary servitude and slavery shall be abolished except for as punishment for crime whereby a person has been duly convicted by a jury of his peers. And so we can start deconstructing that and say, hell, ain't no black people getting no juries of their peers or anything like that. We can look at the predominantly white juries, can't be all white, but predominantly white juries that's putting all these people into slavery. And I would say, you know, this woman does need to be in prison. Now, Mike Huckabee said something about a nonviolent crime and wanting to quote his former prison director, who he says he quotes all the time and whatnot, and promoting this myth that these people just sitting around not doing nothing or lifting weights or watching television. Now, there might be some of them depending upon, you know, their sentences and whatnot. But for the most part, these people are put to work. They're making money for the federal government in case of Unicor, a corporation owned by the corporation USA Inc. that produces goods and services for other corporations using prison slave labor. All right. So let's not act like this ain't happening. Let's not act like, you know, governments and corporations have ever stopped practicing slavery. That's what's going on now. Wall Street was one of the first what they call slave trading markets, and they still involved in slave trading through private prison corporation stock. So, again, this is how these people think, man. Again, they're lying, or they don't know, or they're being deceptive to think that slavery isn't happening right now. But it is. Now, this woman, she did not commit a victimless crime. So I guess, you know, he I don't think he said, I don't know. Did he say nonviolent victimless crime? I don't think he said victimless, because she did victimize the car dealership she was embezzling money from. And so that's a crime. There's a victim. And so that person should pay restitution, whether or not they should be put in prison. Even among abolitionists, there's some thought about that, because like Sister Angela Davis thinks we need to abolish prisons, period. I'm not quite there yet. I think that if you harm an individual, that there should be a penalty to pay, not just paying the restitution, but you need to go to somewhere where you can be rehabilitated. Now, we know that's not happening on these prisons. No, they are not being rehabilitated. When they come out, they are not given any kind of help in finding gainful employment or getting an education or anything like that. No, what happens is that they are relegated to a life of second class. I wouldn't even call them citizens, because they are deprived of their rights even after they have done their punishment, served their time. So let's not also, you know, compound the misinformation by saying that people are being rehabilitated. No, they are being turned into people who will pick up on how to do other crimes. Because once they get out, they're going to have that knowledge, because they can't get food stamps. Won't nobody hire them. So guess what? They're going to lead a life of crime so they can eat, so they can put clothes on themselves, and they can have a place to live and whatnot. But just the fact that you got a popular radio host in Iowa and a presidential candidate, a former governor, and a so-called Christian talking about let's start selling these people into slavery, you know, that should be very concerning. That should be very concerning. And it also concerns me also, before I came on air, I happened to come across this clip where this Christian guy was teaching people, and he was talking about in the book of what book? Yeah, I think it will also be in the book of Exodus, that when the Israelites when the Hebrew people who had been stumbling around in the desert lost for 40 years God promised them a land called the Promised Land. And so he told Moses to get some spies to go into this land and check it out and whatnot and bring back a report. And so they sent out some spies and whatnot to go spy on this land to see what was going on in this land. And they came back with a report, and they said that the land was full of milk and honey and whatnot, but it was people already there, giants even. And I just don't think we could take these people, you know. And so I'm listening to that, and I'm saying this ain't nothing but straight up racism and white supremacy. This is their Christian roots right here. This is why they have gone out from Europe and all over the world, colonizing other people's land, stealing land, killing people, enslaving people, you know, just barbarics, you know, because God told them to. This is your land. And then the man was saying, you know, and I think it does say that in the Bible. Again, it's been a long time since I've picked up the Bible to read it for anything, but it does talk about in there. He mentioned that he was saying, like, these are your enemies and whatnot. And I was saying, I was like, now what the hell them people do to them? They didn't do nothing to them. How are they going to call them enemies? They ain't the ones that enslaved them. They chilling in their own land that they cultivated and producing all this milk and honey and whatnot, herding cattle or, you know, planting crops and all this and that, and they didn't develop the land until it's just overflowing with milk and honey. Ain't nobody starving, ain't nobody going without and all this and that. And so how do you determine that they your enemy? What, cause they don't look like you? Because they don't worship the same God as you and whatnot? So they're your enemies? A lot of the white supremacist psychology is based in that Bible. They follow it to this day. They pretty much don't pay attention to the New Testament, where it's talking about, you know, feeding people and healing the sick and paying your taxes and all that kind of stuff. They ignore that, you know, that there are no racial classifications in Christ. There are no Jews. There are no Greeks, there are no maids and bond servants and all, and no slaves in Christ. No, they ain't interested in that part of it. No, they interested in the part that will justify what's already in their heart, and that's murder, that's slavery, that's theft and genocide. And so it's no surprise that this man thought it would be appropriate to frame his conversation about putting people into slavery in biblical terms. And then I'm looking at black people who call themselves Christians, and I'm like, how can you not see the evil in what these people are teaching you? Just go and take something, cause God said it's yours. Just go and take it. Don't ask for permission. Don't even offer to buy it from them. Just take it. I said it's yours. Go take it. Go kill them. Kill them all and take the land. That's pretty much how they've been operating, ain't it? That's pretty much how white people operate in this country. In their practice of slavery. Now, I know other non-white people do evil things and also, but I'm talking about these white people over here in the U.S. They say this is a Christian nation. It was founded on Christianity. They use the Bible to even convince slaves that to accept their condition, enslave Africans to accept their condition. And now here you got Minister Mike talking about, yeah, let's put people in, let's sell them into slavery as if it ain't already happening. I'm willing to bet you he done took money from the GO group. I'm willing to bet the Correction Corporation of America has contributed to his campaign, if not this campaign, in campaigns past. I'm surprised that, you know, and again, I've just done a little research. I'm surprised that Arkansas isn't overflowing with private prisons, considering, you know, Bill Clinton being a former governor there and he and him and his wife Hillary being very integral in the rise of private prison slavery in this country. So I was shocked to find out that, you know, I found an article where they were saying in 2014 to quote unquote ease overcrowding that they was looking into private prisons and even converting old buildings that are not any in use anymore into prisons. See, no, they ain't talking about letting out old people. They who you know may qualify for parole or something like that, and you know old people very low recidivism rate. They ain't talking about letting out nonviolent so-called drug offenders who haven't victimized anyone, didn't steal from anyone, didn't rape anyone, didn't rob anyone, didn't murder anyone, didn't molest any children, didn't embezzle money from the car dealership. No, they ain't talking about letting them out to ease overcrowding. They talking about bringing in the private prison boys. See, they following California's model where the Supreme Court told them, y'all just got too many people in jail. You're violating the Eighth Amendment, cruel punishment, cruel and unusual punishment. Y'all going to have to do something. Either you let these people go, you got to ease overcrowding. What did California do? We knew before California made it public, and when I say we, I'm talking about new abolitionists. We knew before it became public that the GEO group was going to get contracts with California to take over those enslaved persons that they're using. Because we told you Kamala Harris, Attorney General of California, now running for Congress, in a court case, argued that we can't let these people go because we would deplete California of cheap labor, slave labor. They argued this in court filings. So, yeah, that's what Arkansas is looking at doing, following that model. No, we ain't. These people, they not looking at it like, you know what? We just went crazy during the 90s. We just locked up way too many people for stuff they shouldn't even be in prison for. You know, it's our Christian duty to let these people out, to have compassion, to forgive them and give them a second chance and whatnot and let them out. No, they ain't taking that view. No, it's their Christian duty to sell people into slavery according to Exodus, according to Minister Mike. Wake up, people. They ain't even hiding it from you. They speaking about these things in public. They're speaking about them in public. Mike Huckabee said, sometimes the best way to deal with a nonviolent criminal behavior is what you just suggested. What did he suggest? Selling people into slavery. If I get caught with an ounce of weed, I don't care if you, a bunch of white people, passed the law saying I can't have this natural plant that has all these wonderful healing benefits and whatnot and preventive medicine in it, you know. And so if I get caught with that, how do I owe a debt to the state? Did I steal some weed from the state, huh? Did I rip off the governor of North Carolina? Did I go in his personal stash and steal from him or what? So what debt do I owe? Don't I have a right to use God's plants on this earth that he has put here for our use? Don't I have a right to use it? Who are you to regulate and tell me what I can and put in my body, what I can and cannot put in my body? Hey, that sounds like some old big government mess to me, you know, some big gov trying to tell people how to live their lives and force things upon them and try to dictate to them what they should and should not do and then unlock them up if they don't do what they want you to do or adhere to their laws, their unjust laws. So I'm saying, so what kind of debt do I owe? I don't owe you no debt. I didn't take nothing from you. It is you who have taken from me and owe me the debt. So again, We're going to talk about some debts. Let's talk about that debt that you owe for enslaving people. Not just past, but presently. You have no right to take away their human right to tell them because they use a plant or they use a substance that they deserve to be in prison and they ain't taking nothing from you or did anything to you. This is a tyrannical government, man, I tell you, run by a bunch of crooks and criminals and white supremacists like a Mike Huckabee. This is just the truth of the matter, and it should alarm you. Should alarm you. You should be doing all that you can do to end slavery and human trafficking, the legalized kind in this country. Of course, we don't want young girls and boys to be caught up in sex trafficking on the street. Yeah, we got to end that too. But we're talking about the legalized kind. We're talking about governments or corporations, nation states or corporate states practicing slavery to the point that they even think, you know, that we're foolish enough to think that slavery was abolished, man. They think they so slick with it. And indeed, they have been slick with it over the past 150 years. Got a whole bunch of people ain't never read the 13th Amendment, which brings me to Scott Keyes, the man who wrote this article. Now, Scott, we appreciate you giving us this report on this slavery talk out of Iowa involving Minister Mike Huckabee, the Republican presidential candidate. But brother, I'm sorry, I ain't mean to call him brother. I don't know this dude. Anyway, dude, yeah, let's call him dude. Dude, slavery was never abolished. This is what he wrote at the end of his article. And this will misinform people. It'll fly right over their head because they believe the same myth. This is what he said in closing. This is what Scott Keyes wrote in closing. This isn't the first time Mickelson has endorsed reinstating slavery in the United States. How you gonna reinstate something that's already in place that ain't never been taken away? You can't. See, language, words, definitions. In August, Mickelson argued that undocumented immigrants should become property of the state. They're already property of the federal government. Once they get them in one of them GO-controlled facilities or facilities controlled by MTC, where they're put to work, they are property, where they become property of the federal government and of the, whatever corporation that's running that plantation that they in. We reported on this station the riots and stuff, the rebellions that occurred in Texas not that long ago at an immigrant detention facility because them dudes was like, y'all treating us like crap. We are hurting. We are in need of health care, and you're not giving us health care. You're not meeting our basic human needs, and we're not working anymore. We're not going to do it. We're not going to do it, and you can do whatever you want to do, but we ain't going to do nothing. We stand right here in our cells or in our tents because they put them in little tents under the hot sun, surrounded by barbed wire fence and whatnot. Some of the guys said all kind of bugs and stuff. I imagine scorpions and snakes and all kind of bugs, centipedes, which are poisonous. They getting all bit up and whatnot. So, I mean, all of this is already going on. So anyway, Scott Keyes goes on to say, after a caller pointed out that what he was describing is slavery, Mickelson responded, well, what's wrong with slavery? See, these are the people, man, that a lot of these white people is listening to. They are sociopaths, man. They're vile. They are corrupt. I can't come up with enough of bad words to describe them. These are some of the most evil people on the face of the planet that I wish a comet would come down and just, you know, bury Iowa and be rid of these people. But I ain't sitting around waiting on, you know, the creator to send a comet this way or something. Anyway, But Huckabee's comments, Mr. Keyes continues to write, which come 150 years after the 13th Amendment's adoption, appear to be the first time in modern history that a credible presidential candidate has joined the fringe called to reinstate slavery. See, this is what Max was talking about the other night. This is what I was talking about the other night in terms of the Democratic debate and how Bernie Sanders missed the opportunity to make history, to be the first person in terms of modern history to call for end of slavery. Now, he ain't calling for a total into slavery, but he's calling for private prisons and jails to be abolished. All right, he's calling for them to just outright be abolished, and that is a very important aspect of slavery in this country, because it is from those corporations that we get the lobbyists and the millions of dollars in campaign donations going to these people that then pass three strikes laws and you're locked up for life, or, you know, criminalizing marijuana, or criminalizing any substance. Criminalizing drug addiction or people activity. So big opportunity missed there, Mr. Sanders. You could have been the first presidential candidate in the history of television, in the history of radio, in the history of print media, since at least 1864, to call for an end to slavery. You could have been that guy. You missed that opportunity. But again, this guy may mean well, and I made sure I tweeted at him and told him, dude, the 13th Amendment did not abolish slavery. It only amended it. I left a comment for anybody else that comes behind me. And I posted the text of the 13th Amendment. How are you not going to post to talk about the 13th Amendment when the entirety of the 13th Amendment, which is only two sections, is less than a paragraph? I don't even think it's five sentences in it. Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Now, because you've been programmed all your life since birth to believe that slavery was abolished, the 13th Amendment made sure of that, then you might just skip over that section that says except. Maybe you don't got a full grasp of what except means. You don't really know the definition, except. So again, slavery was not abolished. It was amended. The 13th Amendment amended slavery. It didn't abolish it. It didn't abolish it whatsoever. It made it legal. It made it constitution under certain conditions. What are those conditions? Convict somebody of a crime. What had happened after 1865? Huh? Convict leasing program, black codes, Jim Crow, passing all these laws and stuff, criminalizing black people, targeting black people, convicting them with all white juries, and then sentencing them to prison, to where then the prison leased them out under the convict leasing program to the railroads, to the mines, to the plantations that they just were allegedly set free from temporarily only, to put them right back to work. Because not only was the South dependent upon slavery, but this entire nation was dependent upon the free labor of black people. So, even Mr. Keyes calls himself a progressive, says that he went to college and got a piece of paper a BA in political science and a MA in sociology. He been on MSNBC and TBD News Talk TV and has been a guest on many radio shows. He writes for The Atlantic, Politico, The Christian Science Monitor, and The Chronicle of Higher Education. And he lives in Washington, D.C. So he got all of that paper that says that he's a smart person and this man don't even know that slavery was never abolished. He even quotes the 13th Amendment, but apparently doesn't even understand the 13th Amendment, let alone, not even sure if he read the 13th Amendment. That's why I say, man, going to these places to get a piece of paper to say that you're an expert on this and you're an expert on that, and I should trust your word because, you know, Harvard told me I should trust you, that you know what you're talking about, and a lot of tiny people don't know what the hell they're talking about. They are not experts on these subjects. They are just showcased. And then he's spreading. I see what he's doing just as bad as what they're doing. Because he's miseducating people, misinforming people with disinformation about slavery being abolished when, as a political science major, he should know that it shouldn't. But again... No, I thought about changing over in when I was in college to being getting a political science degree. But so I can't say for sure what they teach them, if they read the Constitution or anything like that. But I know this man is ignorant when it comes to what the 13th Amendment did and does to this day. There's no excuse for that kind of ignorance. When we live in an information age where you can just type in the 13th Amendment in a search engine on the internet and pull it right up and read it for yourself. So is this guy being, how should I put this? Is he just being ignorant? Is he just showing his ignorance, or is he being deceptive? And he's promoting the lie that slavery was abolished. I don't know if he's being deceptive or this is just an oversight on his part, but the end result is the same. A lie is being promoted to the masses, and we can't let those lies stand. So I emailed him. I didn't email him. I will email him and invite him on the program, and we'll talk about this. But I did tweet at him, and I said to him, slavery was not abolished. 13th Amendment left it in place as punishment for crime. You should correct your article. Let me go to the phone lines. Area code 973. Thanks for giving us a call today here on Black Talk Radio News. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Good afternoon, Mr. Reed. How are you?
I'm not going to complain too much. I'm safe for the moment behind these enemy lines. How about yourself?
Good. You know, I have some questions for you. Number one, let me make a comment first of all. I've always said that I'm a member of the People's Organization for Progress, and I'm one of the lead persons here in my town for the branch of People's Organization for Progress. And Mr. Reed, it's this year that my chairman, he and the vice chairman, they both were Princeton graduates, Ivy League schools, cream of the croppers. I mean, you know, when we talk about education per
right,
se.
Right, right, right.
Both of them are from Newark, New Jersey, born and raised there, got scholarships as very smart individuals, and went on to Princeton University. And my chairperson, Mr. Lawrence Hamm, did in fact study political science and history. Now, I've been with the organization for 4 years, and I had never heard him mention about the 13th Amendment until now. So I do believe there are people who probably it's been skimmed over. You know what I mean? Because when I first started listening to the Black Talk Radio and heard this, I was ignorant to it, the fact, too. And I've been with People's Organization for 4 years, and we discuss a lot. I mean, we had an in-depth conversation about last night at our meeting about the the Farrakhan March, and we have communists in our organization, and we had a lot of different points of view. So I am under the assumption that people, it skimmed over. I even told a teacher about this. She's a teacher. She said, "Oh, I never knew this. I've seen this, but I never knew the exception clause." I guess you just read the first part of it, and you don't really, because it's not really focused on, like, your program, your station really puts a lot of emphasis on that. And that's why when I heard it, I was like, well, where have I been all my life? Nobody discussed this in school board exception clause and went into all the other tangents. And here my chairman, like I said, a political science major, history major, graduate of Princeton University, cream of the crop school, Ivy League school, never mentioned it. He mentions a lot. I mean, the guy is pretty in-depth. I mean, historically, I don't think it's too much. But I think, again, it's been skimmed over. And that's why a lot of people don't really know and don't really focus on it, because again, in school, they let you focus on what they want you to focus on. And then I went to college too, and I've never heard this before like this. I really am. So when I heard it, it all really made sense to me. It all came together with the prison industrial complex, you know, the convict leasing, the Jim Crow, as you just said. It all comes together, and it has to be. I mean, that has to be what they had in place to just make it that way so everybody can be okay about it. Like, you know, we're gonna put slavery in another fashion. So my question to you is, when did you first hear about it? When did you first learn about it? And did, you know, was this discussed in elementary school or high school to you? And, that's what I really want to know. Because, like I said, everybody has their own. It's just not mentioned like that, Mr. Reed, at all. And, you know, it's not that we're at fault at this, but.
No, I'm not blaming people.
You gotta learn from teachers and people like that. So that's what happened, sir.
Yeah, I understand that some of us are victims of public education, even a private education. Now, I imagine that they're not teaching this or whatnot. In terms of going to school, I went to public school, elementary school. They don't really focus on stuff like that. I went to elementary school in Detroit, but I went to junior high once we moved back down to our homestead here in North Carolina. Junior high, no. High school, no. History was my favorite subject. I stayed in that history book. All the other kids would be talking, waiting for the bell to ring. I noticed that, you know, my teacher was pointing out to another teacher, look at Scotty over there with his head buried in that book. So I never once in that book even saw the 13th Amendment, you know. And so how did I come about it? I can't remember what caused me to look up the 13th Amendment. I know I was reading something or I was watching something. I don't remember. But whatever it was caused me to go on the internet and type in 13th Amendment. This was about 4.5, 5 years ago. And then when I read the 13th Amendment, that exception clause jumped out at me. That's the first, like you mentioned, okay, people will probably read the first couple of sentences that slavery and voluntary servitude shall be abolished. And then that's it. The mind doesn't pick up on the rest of the information because you've already, I guess, been trained that, oh, that's what I'm looking for. That's what I've been told. That's what I've been taught. That's what I've been seeing in the movies. This confirms it and all. And you don't read the rest. All right, but I read the rest, and the first thing that jumped out of me was except, and I was like, except, what the hell you mean except for? I was like, oh, now it all makes sense. What's been going on? It ain't just racism and white supremacy. It's racism and white supremacy with a purpose. And what's that purpose? To put our behinds and keep our behinds in slavery, making profit for them. So that's how I came across it, and I have never forgotten it. And in fact, it is what led me to reach out to Max Partis and put out a public call for somebody to come aboard and help me start New Abolitionist Radio. Let's start a group, Move to Abolish 21st Century Slavery, and let's start educating the public. So that's how I came across that knowledge. And to your point about him being Princeton educated and, you know, a lot from our research, and I've just rationalized it this way now, because I've read stuff from actual professors talking about slavery in past tense that work for Harvard or teaching at Harvard or teaching at these Ivy League schools. But then I know that they probably been told that, you know what, our endowment, We got that great big old endowment from slavery. So you don't want to really be talking about that too much, because then people might actually find that we also invested in modern slavery. As we just heard, you know, Columbia University this year finally divested itself of its private prison holdings. And so I imagine that it's the same in these Ivy League schools as they are, as it is on at the high school level. It is not being talked about. They might mention the 13th Amendment, but they ain't going to read it. Last year, I made a video. It was the anniversary, the 150th anniversary of the 13th Amendment. All these articles was coming out on mainstream media and alternative websites celebrating the 13th Amendment, which abolished slavery and all this and that. And they mentioned the 13th Amendment, but not once did they ever publish the 13th Amendment. There was one article that I found that published just the first part. They said, slavery and involuntary servitude shall be abolished, ... Didn't even put the rest. And I felt that was done on purpose. And that's a concerted effort to keep lying to the public, to make us think that, oh, slavery is a thing of the past. The United States, you know, spilt a whole lot of blood to settle and end that evil institution, and it's not going on anymore. And in fact, it is.
I definitely agree with you. You know, like I said, listening to the Black Talk Radio, I don't know if I really would have found out. Like I said, my chairman brought it to the platform probably about maybe 3 months ago, and he was looking extremely perplexed when he said it. Like, you know, I mean, he's like, how can I have missed this? In a sense, you know, but I agree with you. That endowment is pretty big at Princeton, and you're right. The fact that they don't want to be touching us, that's a very valid point. I thank you for your time, Scott. I'm just going to keep listening. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Let me see. AQ
is cleared.
I probably will be going over the time because, again, Brother David, is right now, his family is in transition right now as they prepare to move from California. And so he let us know that he was not going to be on air on Fridays until they complete that move. So he won't be on air today. But tonight, hopefully I'll hear from Brother Robin, and Race Treaty will be on, and then the Lotus Place following them at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. All right, I do have a few more stories I want to get to, but also, you know, before I stop talking about Minister Mike Huckabee and this radio host, Mr. Jan Mikkelsen, talking about throwing poor people into slavery. Look, man, they are already doing that. I think I've established that. But, I mean, they are really even writing laws to specifically target the homeless. And not only target the homeless, but to target those who would feed the homeless, so that they don't have to get caught stealing food or something like that. All right? You know, I remember this minister. I was reading this story about this minister was feeding the homeless, and he was arrested because he had violated some ordinance that just had been passed about feeding the homeless in the park. You know, because, we ain't supposed to be helping people. We supposed to act like they ain't in need and just walk right past them or step over them or whatever it is we need to do. But, you know, we certainly can't be helping them and whatnot. So, but what about when you steal from the wealthy? A person who left a comment on that article of Mr. Scott Keys, they said, well, what about? What about Wall Street? What about Wall Street? What about, you know, these people who robbed, who stole from their investors with the whole mortgage securities fraud scam? Well, they're too big to jail. You know, that's what we heard. That's what we heard, I think, from the CEO of America. People said that he said, you know, these banks are too big to fail and they're too big to jail the bank officers and whatnot. So I don't know, but I suspect that it is highly unlikely that Mr. Mikkelsen or Mike Huckabee has ever called for the jailing or the imprisoning or selling these banksters into slavery when they almost brought down the entire global economy from their criminal activities. So, yeah, but slavery for the poor people, you know, but unless you robbing wealthy people like Bernie Madoff did, then, you know, we gonna put you in prison. See, Bernie Madoff, who's in prison for that Ponzi scheme he was running, see, he wasn't out here ripping off a bunch of poor people or a bunch of shopkeepers, small businesses and stuff like that. No, he was ripping off some of the most wealthiest people and organizations and foundations in the United States. So, you know, he got to go to jail. All right, because you broke the code, man. You stole from other rich people. You can't do that. You only supposed to target black and other non-white people and poor people, you know, with this kind of fraud and stuff like that. So, yeah, he's the only one I know that's ever been to prison because he robbed, you know, other wealthy people. Okay, but wealthy people, they generally do not go to prison. They don't go to prison for all the crimes that they commit. All right, so I'm gonna leave that alone. All right, so now I mentioned we do know another person who probably believes in practicing slavery, just like Mike Huckabee, and that's conservative commentator Ann Coulter, who on Twitter, and I did link to her Twitter post where she said that. Let me pull it up. There is a lot of invective, but I'm still waiting for the name and case of one person imprisoned only for smoking pot. Well, see, that's a trick question there. All right. But I'm sure there have been people arrested for only smoking pot. I'm sure of it. As a matter of fact, I know 100% without a doubt people have been arrested. All right. For only smoking pot. Now, then, you know, the people try to play games with me there when I pointed out that, you know, you don't really get put in prison for smoking pot. You get in prison for possessing pot. So, I mean, the question is really a dumb question or a illegitimate question to begin with. But then they came at me and said, well, she said prison. She didn't say jail, because I pointed out, yes, I know people who have spent time in jail for only, well, it was more than smoking weed, because they don't lock you up for smoking weed. They lock you up for possessing it. And then sometimes, hell, all you got to have is paraphernalia. You ain't even got to have weed. Just what you been using to smoke it with. Or find a seed or whatnot. They lock you up for that. You'll go to jail for that. You can be jailed up for a year in certain jurisdictions if you possess over an ounce of weed in places where they have decriminalized it, including here in North Carolina. You can have up to an ounce of weed. If you get caught with it, you'll just get a fine. You got to pay a fine, which is wrong, but don't pay that fine and watch what happens. You're going to jail for a year or more. So it's really a dumb question of her. But like I say to them, you know, these are the people who talk so much about liberty and freedom, right? And talk about how America is the land of freedom. That's a bunch of BS. And they show it to you every day. They don't find nothing wrong with locking up somebody for using a plant, for choosing what goes in their body. They got to have total control over your body. So, you know, just like the women say, the Republican Party or the conservatives want to control a woman's body. No, these politicians, including Republicans, not just Republicans, they want to control everything. They want to control men's bodies as well and lock you up because you use something that, you know, they don't approve of. You're not using the approved drugs that we endorse, you know. Like, you know, getting a prescription to get high so I can deal with my stress or whatever, you know, getting on those kind of drugs that I from the big pharma. Or they want me to go to my local bar and drink and have some alcohol or some wine or some beer or some liquor or something like that. Those are drugs too, you know. So, but no, we don't want you smoking weed, and we think that you should be enslaved for smoking weed because you doing something we said you couldn't do. So this is the hypocrisy, the lunacy, the just crazy talk coming from these people, man. These people are sociopaths, man. I even say that they probably got bipolar disorder, you know, split personalities. On the one hand, you want to talk about liberty and freedom, but on the other hand, now you're talking about locking up as many people as possible. So anyway, Ann Coulter, she wouldn't, you know, respond to anything I said. Some other people started responding to me, but they really didn't have nothing worth reporting. But I did invite them to tune in to New Abolitionist Radio last night so that they could learn how the drug war is part of the system to put people in modern slavery. And I hope that they tuned in. All right. I hope that they tuned in and maybe they can get some facts and stop, you know, listening to people who obviously don't know what the hell they're talking about, or somebody that just has a different perspective on what true freedom, liberty, and justice looks like. But she was on The View today. I think it was today. I'm not sure when it comes on, if it comes in the morning or the afternoon. If it was in the afternoon, it must have been yesterday. But she was selling her on there to sell her latest book. Talking about, I think the name of it is Adios America or something. Anyway, it's a immigrant bashing book, a non-white people bashing book and whatnot. I'm sure she would agree with, she probably has heard of Mr. Jan Mikkelsen, and she probably been on his program, and they talked about selling immigrants into slavery and whatnot, like it ain't already happening. It's already happening. So she was on there, but this is why I wanted to share the story. This goes back to their psychology, you know, their criminal mindset, just how these people think. Because I mentioned with Mike Huckabee how they were citing the Bible in Exodus where, you know, God told them to go commit acts of genocide and land theft. And so we should do what the Bible say, where it talked about putting people into slavery. Let's put them into slavery. And what, she probably was on there talking the same kind of talk and whatnot. But the mindset of settlers. See, she was accused of being an immigrant or a descendant of immigrants. And she was like, I'm not an immigrant. My ancestors weren't immigrants. They were settlers. So this woman, she always is silly like that. I was going to say don't take her serious, but no, you should take these psychopaths very serious. But she's always playing games with people like that. She thinks she's so smart and wise and how she can trip you up and whatnot. She's very good at the word game. You know, she is an author. She's on Fox News a lot, although I think they put her in a doghouse or something because of something she said or didn't agree with or something like that. But, so she's saying that her ancestors were not immigrants. They were settlers. See, they were settlers. They were like them Hebrews that was running around in the desert lost, and God told them to go forth and take this promised land that I have promised to you, that's full of all this land, this milk and honey, and oh, there's people already there inhabiting the land. Oh, don't worry about that. I gave you a mandate that I said it's your land. So you go in there and you do what you need to do to take that land. This is how these people think, man. This is their psychology, man. Very, very dangerous people. Very criminals and whatnot. And they think that, you know, they really do believe that they are Christ-like or that they are God-fearing people and whatnot. You know, pious and moral people. These are some of the most immoral people on the face of the planet, man. Shoot, let's listen to what this woman, this propagandist by the name of Ann Coulter, this white supremacist, had to say. I'm just waiting on this video to load up from her appearance on The View. It's taking a minute. Y'all bear with me. It'll come up. Let me see. Man, I hate these websites that do this kind of stuff. Act like they're going to lock up on you because they got so much stuff embedded. It'll lock you up. I'm just waiting on it to load the video, and then when it loads the video, we'll play it for you. But while it's taking its own sweet time to do that, Ann Coulter, I'll read from this article from Salon.com. It said, Ann Coulter appeared on The View today to promote her new book, Adios America, and to teach native Spanish speakers how to properly pronounce adios, and declared that as a settler, she's a Native American. See, this woman is a straight up psychopath, man. Man, where is the video, dude? Where is the video? Let me see. He's linking to her book. The video was posted on here, and I'm trying to find it for you. So y'all bear with me while I try to find that post. I wonder if they removed the video. That don't make sense. Why would they remove the YouTube video unless the view went after the people on YouTube and told them that they got to take it down? But let me tell you what, I know a trick. Let's see. Ann Coulter. I mean, that's even more insulting to say, I'm a Native American, because my people came here and killed Native Americans and took the land, so that makes me a Native American. I mean, how do you explain that type of thinking, man? How do you do that? All right, here's another. Hopefully, this one will have the video. Let me just pull up this other article. And I mean, the way these people talk and the way that they say these things with a straight face, and I mean, you think they actually believe it, but I don't think Ann Coulter believes this stuff. I think Ann Coulter just be saying stuff to get attention. But the thing is that she's one of these high profile showcase white supremacists, and a lot of people listen to what she says and takes it as gospel truth, and then from there it just emanates out to the rest of us. Okay, that's not loading up. Let's see. Give me just a second, because I had this video, I wanted to play it, but now it is gone. So I apologize for that. Let me see if the view is loaded it up already. All right, I'm experiencing some problems with the computer. Check this out. I'm going to take a short station identification break, play some message music, and then when we come back, I will have that video audio ready for you. I'm going to let y'all listen to this clip from Mumia Abdul-Jabbar. I'm about to say Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but y'all, I'm talking about the political prisoner in Pennsylvania, and this is him giving a report to Prison Radio, which you can find online at prisonradio.org. Why I try to find Ann Coulter's clip.
The representative or the represented? Recently, a black congresswoman from Florida revealed that white legislators from the state's redistricting body changed her district to include the state's overcrowded but underrepresented prisons, thereby ensuring her defeat when the next election comes around for prisoners can't vote. While legislator Corinne Brown, Democrat from the 5th District, has a claim, the better solution shows us how the Congressional Black Caucus has failed its constituencies and its members by not fighting for deeper, broader voting rights like enfranchisement of prisoners. In South Africa, the post-apartheid government opened the door to prisoner voting. The same practice holds for Israel. If the Congressional Black Caucus had fought for and prevailed on prisoner enfranchisement, Representative Brown would have no viable argument against the redistricting process, for prisoners would be allowed to vote for anyone, just as everyone can. The nation that claims to be a democracy should not exclude people from voting, but seek the broadest, deepest constituency. All of the people should be represented, not just some. The prisoner exclusion from voting arises from state attempts to weaken black political power after Reconstruction, which outlawed all black voting under white supremacist governments and legislatures. The echoes of that tradition remains a principle in American law, with little other than tradition itself as justification. This is no solution to the crisis of mass incarceration, not by a long shot. Mao famously said, "Politics is war without bloodshed." It has its place, too, to combat the extreme isolation facing captives of the biggest imprisonment boom on earth. It's not a solution. It's not a talisman to be worshipped. It's a tool, and the oppressed need every tool that they can touch. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison
Radio. You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com. All right. I was able to find a clip of it on YouTube, and I'm just going to give you some warning because I don't want you to be distracted by this. Focus in on the white supremacist, because she tried to take the focus off of herself and put it on Raven Simone for the ignorant comments she made about people's names and whatnot, and she would discriminate. So she tries to come at Raven Simone and take the heat off of herself and put it on Raven Simone. See, that's why you don't get on TV and say stupid stuff, because it'll come back on you. All right. But anyway, this is the clip. This was from The View. I believe it was earlier today. So I'm going to go ahead and let you listen to the clip of her segment in its entirety. It's about 8 minutes long. But pay attention to what these white people be saying. Pay attention, especially when you know a person is a racist suspect or a white supremacist. Especially pay attention to what they say. But this is so that you'll be armed with information. So if you encounter these arguments from these people, I'm not an immigrant. I'm not a descendant of an immigrant. I'm a descendant of a Native American or whatever.
The very shy and retiring Ann Coulter is an 11-time best-selling author whose latest book is called Adios America, The Left's Plan to Turn Our Country into a Third World Hellhole. That's the title. Sounds like a perfect holiday stocking stuffer to me. Please welcome Ann Coulter. Can I ask you two questions? One is, you know, about Trump threatening to boycott, and the other is about Snooki having sex in the car. The question is,
definitely Snooki.
Okay, what do you want to say about it?
First of all, I'm so glad I'm doing The View, so I found out about this. I was just watching you backstage. You don't get the real news watching the other channels. I guess that's one way to get your husband to have sex with you. He was driving, and I sat on him. Why not? And then I tied him up and attacked him. That's when I conceived my child.
Okay, would you ever try to do that?
No, I don't.
Okay, all right, let's get to politics. Because Republicans seem to be coming to terms with the fact that, Donald Trump may in fact be the nominee.
I've been saying it all along.
Have you?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what happens if he runs against Hillary? He'll be demolished. The woman knows the stuff.
And I think he's exposing really both parties and how much control the donors have. He's saying things that people have been dying for someone to say. But they won't, because their donors, in the case of immigration, want the cheap labor. We saw it with Scott Walker. Trump comes out against anchor babies. Scott Walker tries to agree with him and saying, oh, I'm against anchor babies, too. And then billionaire GOP donor Stanley Hubbard steps in and says, no, we're for anchor babies. And suddenly Scott Walker drops that as his position. Same thing with the 12% tax rate.
You can't just, if you disagree with him or go up against him, you drop out. You lose the money.
Well, no. You can't take positions that most Americans, I mean, it's Donald Trump and the American people against the political class.
Yeah.
And the donor class, the same thing with his tax plan. And I mean, I love him for immigration.
But the donor class is the Koch brothers, let's say, for example. Mm-hmm. Are they going to put their money behind Trump?
Probably not, but who cares? The people are for him. That's what we're finding out right now. Look at all of the money Jeb Bush had. And by the way, both parties with that 12% rate on hedge fund managers, Hillary Clinton was on the finance committee. I'm sorry, that is unfair. And it takes Donald Trump saying no hedge fund manager should pay the same as Ann Coulter does. It takes him saying that, because the donors have been stepping in saying, no, we like paying less than everyone else.
But wait a minute.
I remember. You already sold
okay,
the
left. Do you think he can
you're
win? You're paying a higher tax rate than hedge fund managers.
I remember seeing you at CPAC in 2013 saying that we shouldn't have a businessman, that we should have either a senator or a governor, and you said, in fact, it's got to be from a big state, not something the size of Rhode Island.
Right.
So you, at that point, you were against the businessman. What changed your tune?
Donald Trump he's the one exception to this rule. I also said we shouldn't be running divorcees. I'm altering that for Trump, but
no,
don't expect me to hold it to it going forward.
You also said you had a height requirement. You don't have a hair requirement?
I have a height requirement. I love this hair.
Do you really?
Were too short. You had to go like you know, line them up against the little clown in front of the roller coaster.
And yeah. They can't be divorced.
Well, actually,
Ronald Reagan was divorced.
The reason I'm generally against the non-governors running is I call them the novelty candidates, the businessmen. I mean, whether it was Herman Cain, Michelle Bachmann, Newt Gingrich, even you see it a little bit now with Ben Carson. They're not prepared for the rough and tumble of politics. They say things and sort of box themselves in, and also then they get bored and just say, "I'm going home." Trump has been through all this before. He's been so attacked. I mean, if you were in New York area in the 80s, Spy magazine was going after Trump constantly. There's nothing, no new scandals were coming out that are going to come out against him. And the other thing is that I love about Trump, and make an exception for him on a lot of rules, I guess, well, at least two, Reagan, Romney, Trump, the only people who have run for president whose lives will be made immeasurably worse, both by running and by winning.
All right, Anna, enough about Trump. Now let's talk about you.
Yeah.
Adios, America. Of course, I say hola, America, but all right. So you wrote your book, Adios, America, The Left's Plan to Turn our Country into a Third World Hellhole.
Yes.
And your stance on immigration is part of why you like Trump. You've said that you are a one-issue voter now. Tell us, what does this provocative title mean? Explain it to us.
Well, I say it, adios, America.
I say adios, America.
Right. What it means is that the nation that has been so welcoming to immigrants, to women, to children, is an amazingly successful nation, and the Democrats do it for the votes. The rich do it for the cheap labor and the cheap maids. They strut around like they're Martin Luther King. No, who is our immigration policy hurting? And this is the post-1965 immigration. We're bringing in millions and millions of people from very poor cultures, from very backwards cultures. No, our social programs are for the American poor. They are for
the American working class. Two immigrants, and I don't think either of us qualify as poor maids. But I wanted to ask you, what's your family's immigration story?
Are
you a Native American?
Why, yes, I am. I'm a settler. I'm descended from settlers, not from immigrants.
Oh, well, it's not a Native American.
I have a question for you. It's just an older.
No, if you mean Indian.
Were you already here when the Pilgrims showed up? Were your people here?
But I'm not living in Cherokee Nation, so I am not an immigrant to Cherokee Nation. I'm living in America, which was created by settlers, not immigrants.
I have a question.
But
can I interrupt you for 2 seconds, please?
Yes, the poorest
I have a question. My mom taught me when I was younger, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. And why do you think that it's important? Why do you think that's important to mudsling and have these words that obviously touch the hearts and souls of so many people of America being said when we're taught something different as a child? Could you explain that to me? And why do you think your success is based off of that?
Well, I'm at least talking about policy. You have a position on what people's names should be. Watermelondria. I mean, you'll insult people for their names. I'm talking about a government policy that affects all Americans and immigrants and the people living here, and it's harming our country.
So are you?
So you don't follow it.
Are you against?
Are
you against all immigration or just illegal immigration?
No, right now the entire immigration system, the bureaucracy has got to be shut down because it is being used to serve, again, the business elites, mm-hmm. the upper classes, the people who get to have all the cheap maids. It's driving down. Well, it's true, though.
But that's not all immigration.
Down. This is what you has know, led to, well, okay, but.
No, but my mother came to this country in the 70s because there was a shortage of medical professionals who could do the job.
That's
and
very unusual,
this year,
though.
Not really.
No,
there's
yes,
also,
it is.
There's also...
No, yes, it is.
Wait a minute, Anne. Have you been to a hospital lately? There are many doctors from Pakistan, India.
Fabulous. But the point is... Okay. But whenever people talk about the immigrants we like your mother, they cite the immigrants that aren't the majority of immigrants coming in, so fine. Fine, okay, if they're going to be doctors,
well, you know what, Anne,
but when we
so
have
many...
a majority of immigrants are on welfare, why would any country bring
Americans
in...
Americans are on welfare,
why
period.
Would...
America,
no, but why do you
there
bring
no jobs
in people?
Anymore. They've sent their jobs overseas.
We can't do anything about... We can't do anything about criminal Americans, about poor Americans. We don't need to be importing other countries' poor people.
But there's so many other things to talk about besides being an immigrant
basher. Who lives here?
Come on.
But they don't sell votes. Who lives here and votes here?
They don't sell votes.
This is a very good...
So then are you for just... rich immigrants coming in, but not poor immigrants coming in?
Well, what I would do, well, right now there have been, we have 42 million foreign-born in the country now. It's very high. I think we need a little time to assimilate the ones already here. And then, yeah, set up a system where we get immigrants like your mother and not, look, most of the wealthy keep saying they want to go.
We all would like to say,
we
have to go. I'm sorry to cut you off.
Okay, we will stop it there. I was taking notes and whatnot, and I tell you, man, this woman, I tell you, Ann Coulter is a white supremacist, and that definitely was coming through to me in the statements that she made, even to correct a person who speaks Spanish. I don't know if it was that lady's first language or if it's her second language. She said she is Latino, Hispanic, or whatever. And so to even try to correct her on a pronunciation of adios, you know, that, again, white supremacy, it's not even your native language, but you're going to tell someone who speaks the language, all right, grew up speaking the language, how to pronounce adios, the audacity of white supremacists, man, I'm telling you. Oh, wow. Immigrants. She was talking about immigrants. No, let's jump on the settler portion. All right, she's saying she's a Native American because settlers settled this country. No, they did not settle this country or anything. It was already a nation here when they came here. It was called the Mississippian Nation, made up of various indigenous tribes. She mentioned Cherokee Nation. All right, that's one of them. There were many others. I mean, the Mississippian Nation spread from the east almost to the west coast. That's how big it was. All right, and covered much of the south, and so it already had trade routes. For example, in Charlotte, North Carolina, they got this place that's in the center of the city that's called Trade Street, Trade and Tryon Street. Well, at Trade and Tryon Street, they got a big old bust of a indigenous Indian there. They also got a bust of a black man with a hammer, but he probably was a slave because they, you know, victim of the convict leasing program, and they were leasing out all those black men to go work on the railroad and whatnot. And then they got like a African woman with a child and whatnot, probably one of Thomas Jefferson's concubines that he was enslaving for sex or whatnot. But the reason they call it Trade Street is because it was a trade route that was already here. There, this area of North Carolina was already developed. Did it have skyscrapers and football stadiums and all? No, it didn't. But it already had villages. It already had roads. It had trade and commerce that was here before y'all came here. And so, like I have said on Facebook, as I posted pictures about the Mississippian Nation and showing you how vast it was and all of the different major trade centers that they had, all these Europeans did was come and build on top of it. Burnt down the villages, raised them, you know, like it raised meaning as in took a bulldozer and just, you know, took off the soil and demolished everything that was already here and built on top of it. This was not some wilderness, some undeveloped land that they came to. All right. Again, our Mississippian Nation, named for the River Mississippi, which was a major indigenous, mode of transportation to all these different trade centers and whatnot. And so they give you the impression that they came here and they just built something out of nothing. That's a lie. And settler is a, well, I have heard conscious people like refer to Israel as a settler nation, you know, Europeans coming to other lands and just taking it over but not just only taking it over, but committing acts of genocide, enslaving people and whatnot. And she's proud of that. She's playing word games here, but she is a very proud racist white supremacist. That's what a settler is. A settler is a thief. a settler in this country as it exists today, which ain't really a country. It's a corporate state incorporated in 1871 USA Inc. All right. So she's very proud of their criminality, of their thievery, not just land, but also intellectual property. And I'll get to that when I start talking about Thomas Jefferson. All right. But the next note that I wrote, Raven Simone. See, Raven, that's why you don't come out your mouth with the way you be coming out your mouth with your anti-blackness. Because you're going to try to lecture this woman on, didn't your mama raise you to, if you ain't got nothing good to say, don't say nothing at all. Man, that was an easy burn for Ann Coulter to come on you and say, wasn't you just on here talking about people named Watermelon Drea and how you would discriminate against them and all this? She didn't bring up discrimination, but yeah, you get the gist. See, this is why you don't get up on white people's TV and just have all this crazy mess coming out your mouth. Cause it will come back to bite you, and she bit you real hard. She had you pretty much, you know, dumbfounded and speechless, sit and relegated yourself to the sidelines. Cause, you know, I gotta think about what she just said. My mama did teach me not to run my mouth. And like even her own father came out and said not that long ago that she wasn't raised that way, that crazy stuff she be saying, we didn't raise her that way. So let me distance myself from those comments that my daughter made. So yeah, I had to point that out. But then she want to talk about we are importing poor immigrants. Now, they are about to import some poor immigrants, literally, from Syria. All right. They are about to dump tens of thousands of people into the black community, into these poor, depressed, resource-starved areas so that they can fight for resources just like everybody else is fighting for resources and fighting each other, not fighting the white supremacists. All right. So, but they don't import immigrants, man. Come on now. They don't. Unless she knows something I don't. She probably, I mean, I know she's higher up the totem pole and she gets to talk to the most powerful racist white supremacists in the nation. So she probably knows something I don't. Maybe they do can, you know, put in an order to some human traffickers and say, you know what? I don't like my last slave maid. She ran away. I need a new one, so I need to put in an order. But they got to speak English, and they can't be, you know, over 35, but at least 18 and whatnot. So maybe they do have that kind of service where they can just import a slave or something from South America or somewhere. But look, the majority of those people are coming here. Why? That's the most important question to ask. You might ask why. Why are these people coming here? Why is things that bad in their own countries that they got to come here to look for, you know, opportunity and whatnot? The short answer is yes, it's that bad in their country. So why is it that bad in their country? Well, we can point to the United States of America Incorporated as being the reason why. We can look at foreign policy. Ann Coulter says she want to talk about policy. Well, let's talk about the policy that the United States has implemented in these countries and forcing these countries to abide by, like the drug war. Some of these South American countries said, we want to end the drug war. It's just too much violence going on. Plus, it don't make sense to be locking up people for using a plant that we have used for thousands and thousands of years and whatnot. Part of our culture and whatnot. So we think that's a bad idea. We don't want to do that no more. And then that's when the United States come back and say, well, guess what? That means then you don't get this money. You don't get these bribes. You don't get this multi-million-dollar package that we was going to give you. You don't get to have this and you don't get to have that and whatnot. And then when you look at these corporations, you know, they go down there where these people, these are U.S. based corporations run by white supremacists. who go down there and they treat people like crap because they don't have the worker protection laws that you have here in the United States, even though those sometimes aren't enforced. But they definitely ain't being enforced in Mexico. They ain't being enforced in Nicaragua. They're not being enforced in Guatemala. So these corporations go down there and not only rape the land of its natural resources, but rape it of its human resources as well. And just mistreat those people and whatnot. So these people, a lot of them are fleeing violence. A lot of them is fleeing poverty that is the direct result of U.S. policy. So these people are not all coming here like the Democrats are importing them so we can get them to keep us in power. And when I say us, I don't mean I'm a Democrat or anything like that and whatnot. So, just the BS coming out of her mouth about importing poor immigrants and whatnot. What she's truly concerned about is what a lot of white supremacists are concerned about, that I have heard them, utter words to the effect that they're worried about this country becoming less white. You got white women and black men making black babies. You got black women and white men making babies. Hispanics, mixed marriages and all of that. But then they're also looking at the fact that a lot of them aren't having babies. They ain't having babies. And there are more white people in this country dying than there are being born. And so they already see that decline in their white power because they ain't got enough people being born to sustain it, right? So then that's why they're worried about all of these non-white people coming into the country, because you know what? They might help overthrow the system of racism and white supremacy, even though they ain't on the mind of these people coming here. They just trying to survive. They just trying to get food, get housing, get medicine, because it's not available in their countries. They're fleeing the violence after the ATF dumped tens of thousands of AR-15s into the hands of drug cartels down there. And then all these thousands and thousands and thousands of people being caught in the crossfire between either the gangs fighting each other, the drug cartels fighting each other, or fighting the police in the federal rallies. They're fleeing all that violence. That the root cause of it is America. So she, she's being dishonest there, and I wouldn't expect nothing less from her. But she was like, well, let's hold up a minute. We already got tens of millions of them, perhaps 100 million of them, or however many she said. But let's give them time to assimilate. She wants them to get the Negro treatment. That's what she wants. She wants them to be turned into Americans, because that's what assimilation means. Assimilation means, in terms of white supremacy, is to abandon your culture, abandon your roots, abandon your language, and you act like us. You become just like us. You become Americans. And see, a lot of them are not doing that. They're not. They're not assimilating. They're not. They didn't come here to assimilate. They came here for a job. Now, let me step back for a minute. In terms of importing, they do allow these people to come here. They most certainly do, because they're making a lot of money off of them. Ask the GEO Group, XMTC, Ask Correction Corporation of America. They got, and we got ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, got quotas and whatnot to fill up private prisons, fill up these beds and whatnot, so we can put them to work and make money off of them. So they are like, that's why they really won't secure the borders. They could secure them borders if they wanted to. They really, really could, but they don't want to. I mean, it would be a monumental task. We're talking about hundreds and hundreds of miles of remote areas and whatnot, but it can be done. You got technology. You can do it. You got drones. You got blimps in the sky, because I was stationed on the border. I saw the blimps watching the border and whatnot. So they really could, if not outright stop it, they could, make it, you know, to where it's only a drip from the faucet and not so many of them are coming across. But where would they get that cheap labor? Where would they get that slave labor from to lock up on a prison plantation? So that's why they won't close the borders, and that's why they making that money. And she was, you know, to a certain extent, being truthful, the elite, the wealthy, they the ones that want them to come here so they could pay them that slave wages and whatnot. Hold them, kidnap them, or hold them prisoner in their houses. And, you know, when they get through cooking dinner or washing dishes or whatnot, you got to go back to your little room in the basement where we going to lock you up and whatnot. So she is right in that respect. That is wealthy people who are creating the demand and whatnot. So, but, yeah, but that assimilation thing right there, that really stood out to me, because that's what they want black people to do. They want you to assimilate. They want you to look at Thomas Jefferson. They want you to look at George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, and these other vile, evil white supremacists as your founding fathers. Yeah, that's what they want. They want you to assimilate. They want you singing a Star Spangled Banner. They want you to stand up at the football game and put your hand over your heart and cite the Pledge of Allegiance or whatever, you know. Yeah, they want you to do that. They want you to assimilate to the point to where you cease to be an African descendant person or an indigenous descendant person, no matter what tribe you belong to. Yeah, you become an American. That's all you are. That is why I reject that term or that phrase, African American. No, 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 no. I'm a black person. I'm a black man, to be specific. And yeah, I got a diverse cultural background and whatnot, but I'm still black, because black is more than just a skin color. It's also a culture created by black people, a unique culture that emanates to the rest of the world. Who do they look to for music? Who do they look to for fashion? We created rock and roll. We created jazz. We created funk. We created rhythm and blues. And everything else emanates from that. The only thing I don't, we might have even created country music. I don't know. Who knows? I'm thinking about Charlie Pride. But anyway, we create so much. The way we wear our clothes, it's the way they wear their clothes. Our hairstyles, they copy those too. You'll see plenty of white people walking around with dreadlocks today, if they ain't got cornrows and whatnot. We have a unique culture that we created in the absence of our stolen culture. So that's what being black means to me. It's more than just being about a skin color. And like Professor Klingman said yesterday, being black is also a state of mind. But they don't want you to have that state of mind. They want you to be an American. When, like Malcolm said, you're a victim of Americans. You're not American. You are their victims. And that's what she wants to do. She wants enough time to victimize these immigrants who have not assimilated themselves into to become flag-waving Americans, turning out every 4th of July to go watch some fireworks and waving the stars and bars and whatnot, the red, white, and blue, pledging allegiance to USA Inc. So, yeah, assimilate. Wow. They're like the Borg, man. They're like the Borg. And if you ain't going to do it willingly, we're going to do it by force. We're going to force you to assimilate. And this is a true story. I am not lying to you. Among the hundreds of stories I may read in a week from some of our members in Move to Abolish 21st Century Slavery, the GEO group is bragging about their family friendly detention facilities for immigrants where the little kids get to learn English and they get to learn about how George Washington chopped down a cherry tree. And, you know, they get to learn about what a great, brilliant man Thomas Jefferson was and Benjamin Franklin, you know, the great inventor and yeah. They brag about it. This is the private prison enslaver, the GEO group. We're bragging about their family-friendly detention facilities because they put the entire family in there. While moms and pops is off somewhere picking some tomatoes or washing dishes or running the prison because they actually run the prison. While they're doing all of that, yeah, the little kids, y'all can go to this prison school. And we gonna teach you how to be a good American for if when and when your family get let out of detention. Yeah, this is what's going on. Entire families. These are work camps. So, anyway, that's all I got to say about Miss Ann Coulter's comments about being a settler and whatnot. No, you're a descendant of racist white supremacists, land thieves, enslavers, and just the most vile, despicable human beings that ever walked the face of this planet. It ain't nothing to be proud about that. But there's hope for you. You don't have to hold on to that legacy. You don't have to follow in their footsteps. You have free will. At any time, you can decide that I'm going to be a person who practices justice. So we all got free will. Ain't nobody putting guns to our heads and forcing us to revel in all this evil. So at any time, you know, she can stop. But I suspect she won't. I suspect she won't. They won't. And so we're going to have to make them stop. That's what we're going to have to do. That's why we calling for 10 million new abolitionists so that we can plot and plan on how we going to end 21st century slavery and human trafficking and have the man and woman power to do it. Now, the last story I want to share with you. We don't have any comments on that story. The last story that I want to share with you. Minister Louis Farrakhan, during his remarks at the Justice or Else rally, told the attendants and those watching via the video feed to do some homework. And what was that homework? He told you do some homework regarding Thomas Jefferson. Now, let me pull up his comments so nobody can say that I'm misquoting him or anything like that. I'm going to read them to you directly. All right. I mean, he has some things, some good things to say, but usually the nonsense really stands out to me, the things that I find to be very alarming. So let me pull that up. It's a very long article. I'm not sure if it's his full comments, but it's published on The Final Call, The Final Call, where he goes to talk about Thomas Jefferson, and he tells people to do their homework. All right, so I done some homework, plus I already knew some stuff. I wasn't totally ignorant about Thomas Jefferson, but I did my homework. Now, let me read these comments. This is from Minister Farrakhan at the Justice or Rally, the Justice or Else rally that took place on 1010 in Washington, D.C. Now, in this mall, it's hallowed ground for us, but it's also sacred ground for those who love America. And Thomas Jefferson was one of the most brilliant of the founding fathers of this country. If you read his words, I'm going to read a few just to let you see that he was not a Christian. He never said he was, but he certainly was what they call a deist. He believed in one God. On the wall of the Jefferson Memorial, he was talking about justice and he was talking about slavery. I want to give you a little study assignment. There was some things when he wrote the Declaration of Independence that they took out because he was dealing with King George as a vile man because he trafficked in black bodies, bringing them to America. I want you to go read his words. Because Thomas Jefferson knew that if the slaves were not set free, one day what King George did by bringing us into slavery would cause the slave to rise and fight against those who were holding us in slavery. We have really come to that point now. Did you hear me? See, this thing has reached a point of explosion. Black people that are here, even those in high places, are saying, we can't take this much longer. There's like a volcanic eruption that's coming now. You know, they say volcanoes are birthed out of magma. That is molten rock with gases. And this molten rock and the gases at the bottom, then you have an upper crust that begins to come down and meet the molten rock beneath. I say, this isn't that an interesting picture? Because I hear that you are in the middle class crying out. Now, that was kind of disjointed there. Like maybe he had a few things on his mind or things swirling in his mind. And he do like I do sometimes, and I forget because I have so much stuff on my mind and so much information to process that sometimes, you know, I don't sound coherent at times. But he said to do some homework on one of the most brilliant of the founding fathers of this country. I'm just going to put this out there right now. I think it's incorrect to refer to a vile racist, white supremacist, a rapist, an enslaver, a person who is also an adulterer. I mean, every foul, immoral thing that we believe is immoral, he did. All right. So using words like brilliant, I mean, I've never heard anybody describe Adolf Hitler as brilliant. Adolf Hitler, he was a brilliant man, one of the most brilliant leaders of Germany, a great man. You know, because brilliant synonymous with being great or something like. I never use positive connotations when I refer to people like Thomas Jefferson. The only words you'll hear me use is like vile, despicable, scum, murderers, rapists, thieves, because that's what they were, man. That's what they were. And I imagine you could have some intelligent criminals out there and whatnot, masterminds and whatnot. But we that's not the context in which he was describing Thomas Jefferson. He said one of the most brilliant of the founding fathers of this country. If you read his words, I'm going to read a few just to let you see that he was not a Christian. He never said he was. And so I don't know what that got to do with it, about him being a Christian or not, because people could say whatever they are. Again, Christianity, again, you know, teaches slavery's okay. At least the Bible does. You know, people got their different interpretations and whatnot. So I don't know. I've heard that from white supremacists debating Thomas Jefferson, and they say he was a deist, and you know, this is proof that the United States was not founded on Christianity, cause Thomas Jefferson wasn't a Christian and whatnot. Well, it's evident though that he wasn't a moral man. So I just really take issue with the minister describing him in such glowing terms. That's sick. And somebody told me that he has talked about these founding fathers in the same language that I have used in the past. And I was like, well, why didn't he say then, you know, one of the most brilliant founding fathers in this country, if you read his words about justice and how he wanted to abolish slavery and all this and that. But we know that he was a hypocrite, and we know he was a liar, and we know he was raping his wife's half sister who was enslaved and whatnot. No, he didn't follow it up with that. And see, we have to be careful, because when we're talking to the masses, we're talking to masses of people who have largely been educated in the enemy schools. Like Malcolm X said, only a fool will allow his enemy to educate his children. Now, we're not going to call people fools or whatnot, because a lot of people don't see that they have any choice and whatnot, and they themselves have been victims, you know, of this education, what they call an education. So we're not going to call them fools, but we know we can't trust these people. We know that they are liars. And so whenever you're talking to a mass of people that we know been lied to all their life about these white supremacists and whatnot, you have to be straight with them. You have to describe these people exactly as they were, and that is enslavers, white supremacists. You don't use words like brilliant, smart, intelligent. You know, you don't use those words to describe them. All right? That's too positive of a thing, and then you're not telling them the rest. All right, but now he did it. I'm glad he asked us to do that homework, because I learned a little bit more about Thomas Jefferson. Now, this is what I already knew about Thomas Jefferson, as I alluded to at the beginning of the program, and I just alluded to a few words ago. Thomas Jefferson, he married this white woman. That white woman had a half sister, because that white woman's father was a white supremacist enslaver himself, and he was having sex with the African women that he was victimizing. And so he produced a child with one of those women. And that woman would be the biological half sister of his all white child that he had by his wife. So Thomas Jefferson marries this white woman. Then he goes to her father and he offers to purchase her sister. Did he purchase her sister because she asked him to purchase her sister and get her sister out of slavery? Because in fact, she didn't view her as her sister. She viewed her as a slave. All right. Probably despised her because, you know, my daddy was cheating on my mama with a slave. So she probably hated her guts or whatnot. But anyway, he went to and purchased this woman's sister, half sister. And then that was his mistress that he was having sex with and producing children with. If that ain't one of the most despicable acts I have ever heard of one of these evil men doing. You're going to marry a woman, then you're going to buy her half-sister and hold her half-sister as your sex slave. And then, you know, producing more children with her. Because as I learned from my homework, and again, I thank the minister for giving us this homework assignment. I found that he was the one that came up with this 4% formula, where he did an audit, and I talked about this on New Abolitionist Radio. He did an audit of all his wealth, all his expenses for his plantation at Monticello and whatnot, and he discovered that, damn, every time one of these African women have a baby, my wealth increases by 4% or more. Wow. He was so floored by his discovery in this wealth producing method that it doesn't surprise me that he kept that woman pregnant and having babies. That's probably the only one we know about. He probably produced a whole lot more children with the mother enslaved African women he had bought. Because he knew every time one of them had a baby, that his wealth at the end of the year was going to increase by 4%. Now, I did learn that. That's something new. And not only did he come up with this 4% formula to increase wealth, he was so proud of his discovery that he then wrote about it and sent it to other slave plantation owners. This is how you can produce your wealth. Keep them African female slaves pregnant and producing children, and your wealth will grow exponentially. At least, in the very least, by 4%. Other slave plantation white racist enslavers put his formula to the test, and they found out, damn, Tom is right. Old Jefferson is right, man. My wealth has increased by 4% for every enslaved African baby that was born on my plantation. This formula became the model, according to the research of some of these historians, for the entire country, not just the South, plantation owners in the South, but also in the North as well. And they still are using this formula to this day. All you got to do is tune in and listen to one of them GO group conference calls, GO group, the private prison enslaver. Tune in to one of their conference calls where they talk about their earnings. They call them earnings calls. And they do one every quarter. And we make sure we don't miss one. And we tune in. And that's the sort of language that we hear. That's the sort of language. We're purchasing this facility on this piece of property, and it has the capacity to hold so many people, and this is what our profit outlook will look like if we fill up this prison and whatnot. Of course, they ain't saying with black bodies and things of that nature. They have to be a little bit more codified than that. But who is the majority of the people ending up in them? Black and brown bodies. So, of course, they don't want that. They don't want that border shut. They don't want the flow of immigrants coming across that border closed down. Because then that's going to cut into their 4% formula for every immigrant that we can get, especially the pregnant ones. Let's bring some pregnant ones in here, too. We will increase our holdings exponentially. Yeah, that's Thomas Jefferson. That's his legacy. So, I didn't know that Thomas Jefferson was that influential in this country as a slaver. I don't care about what he wrote about justice. And yes, he did. When they was having the Constitutional Convention and they was talking about setting up their government and whatnot, they were talking about, he did introduce some legislation or some proposals, I should call them. He did propose that they abolish slavery because he was afraid of these slaves rising up and cutting his head off. He was afraid of that. I bet he was a brutal, vicious slaver too, man. I bet he probably had slaves on his plantation beat to the inch of their life, within an inch of their life. He probably didn't take their life because then he would have been losing wealth or whatnot. But he probably put the fear of God into them. By God, you're going to obey me as your master, and I'm going to make all the other ones come out here and watch us as we beat the crap out of you. All right, because we can't have no rebellious niggas on this plantation. I bet he was vicious, man. That was his sole reason. He didn't, he did write some things talking about this is against the order of nature and whatnot, and, you know, suggesting that human beings shouldn't be enslaving other human beings. But I don't care what he wrote, minister. I don't care what his website that was put up to honor him is mentioning about his abolitionist proposals. We don't care about that. What we care about is what he did. What he did do was some of the things I just mentioned to you. Some very sick, evil, vile things. And those things should have been mentioned. You should have mentioned that while Thomas Jefferson had grand ideals of liberty and justice for white men, I'm telling you people out here today that you can have that for yourself if you would just work together, if you will just unify, if you will just train. We can make that reality not only for ourselves but for our future generations, and we can finish the job. We can make that Declaration of Independence and all Thomas Jefferson's grand writings on abolishing slavery, because slavery was never abolished, and we can make that come true. Who's with me? I need 10 million fearless new abolitionists to rise up with me and finally put an end to the institution of slavery. And him, no, he didn't say that. He didn't say that. He told you to go read what he said about justice and liberty and how he tried to abolish slavery and whatnot. And he tried, and then to blame it on King George, I don't think, not from what I was able to read, He wasn't really blaming it on King George. Oh, King George, he forced this slavery upon us. Man, this dude was already practicing slavery. They were practicing slavery, man. They didn't force that on the colonists. They did that all on their own. But I didn't know. I didn't know that he had actually introduced some abolitionist stuff. But I guess somebody talked him out of it. But then he could have just been running his mouth to be running his mouth. Because this abolitionist, and I just found out about him. Thank you, Minister Farrakhan, for telling me to do my homework, because I'd have never heard about this abolitionist. But his name is Moncure D. Conway. All right, let me tell you who how do you say his name again? Mr. Moncure D. Conway was. Okay, he was born March 17, 1832, in Falmouth, Stafford County, Virginia. Let me see. And he died November the 5th, 1907, in Paris. He was an American abolitionist, Methodist, Unitarian, and free thinker, an admirer of Thomas Paine. He was also a minister, a biographer, a historian, and writer who lived most of his life abroad. All right, let me jump down to the part about, they don't even have a section for his abolitionism. So I'm going to have to find that later. But this is what Mr. Moncure D. Conway, an abolitionist who was around. No, this dude wasn't around when Thomas Jefferson was around. No, but this is what he wrote about Jefferson. Because I'm sure people were bringing up Jefferson and talking about he was an abolitionist and he liberty and justice and all this and that and whatnot. And so I guess he, being a historian, read up on Jefferson just like I did. And so Moncure Conway said this about Jefferson. He said, "Never did a man achieve more fame for what he did not do." So who gives a darn about what Thomas Jefferson might have wrote some time ago about slavery and it being evil and out of balance? We don't care about what he wrote. We know what he did, and he practiced slavery. He practiced slavery. He was a rapist. He was cheating on his wife, so he's an adulterer. He was introduced. I actually read that Thomas George Washington. Now, I got to do some background research on this because I don't believe this. This is not something I have ever read about George Washington. But I was reading that Thomas Jefferson, when he sent this, maybe they wasn't talking about George Washington. Maybe they were. Anyway, when he found out his 4% formula for increasing his wealth by having all these African babies be born in slavery, said that one plantation owner was so disgusted that he sold all his slaves. See, he didn't just free them, he sold them. You know what I'm saying? He didn't free them, he sold them. So he wasn't willing to lose no money, so he didn't feel that strongly about it. But he was just disgusted, because that's the first time that he had heard of human beings, African slaves, being used or described in the same terms of you would describe cattle. And thus, that's where the term chattel, that's what chattel slavery is, where you're being treated just like cattle. What do cattle ranchers want their cattle to do? To produce calves, right? To produce more calves by having babies and whatnot, or calves is the proper word for them, because it increases their holdings. It increases their wealth. Same way that Thomas Jefferson was looking at the enslaved Africans. For every African baby born on my plantation, my wealth will increase 4%, in some cases up to 8%. He just had to share this information because I guess he wanted all his buddies to be wealthy or wealthier too. That is a disgusting That is the most vile. This man is worse than what I thought he was. And I thought he was pretty damn bad. I mean, that's pretty bad, you know. You having, I mean, I wonder how his white wife felt. You raping my, first I'm betrayed by my father who produced this nigga baby with this slave, cheating on my mama. Now you cheating on me with, you know, the daughter of the woman that was cheating on my mama. Oh, man. Man, I bet Sally Hemming was, I think that was her name. I bet she was in fear all the time. And the way they try to write it up about his relationship was with her was like it was consensual or something. Like they were this grand love story. Like she had a choice. She ain't had no choice. She knew that she had to act in a manner to save her life. That if she rejected his advantages, she probably was going to get strung up like other slaves on the plantation and beat to death. So that's rape, man. That's rape. Under those conditions, ain't no love story. But that's how they try to present it with you, present it to you, don't it? He took her with him when he went overseas, and she was always by his side and all this and that. Yeah, as a sex slave. As a sex slave. And I hate to think of it in these terms, but she probably got so good at it that he didn't want nobody else. This is a sick individual. He's not brilliant. He's not great. There's nothing positive to be said about this man. He's a vile, evil murderer. Slaver, rapist, adulterer, land thief. And that's how he should be described to our people. And especially to our youth who are already being lied to about him. Being taught the same thing. So I just took issue with that. Took issue with it. I ain't mad at the minister because, I mean, well, we're getting mad. I don't know him. Never met him. Being mad ain't going to cause him to miss any meals or anything like that. But I'm just terribly disappointed that such an educated man would say such a thing about Thomas Jefferson. And not only say such a thing to Thomas Jefferson, but to say it to over a million people. Because I read 750,000 were in attendance, and I know it's probably another million more, if not more, that was watching it all throughout the day. Because I certainly was, and my family members, we were watching it. Does that take away from any constructive things that he had to say? No, it don't. Like boycott Christmas, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see what the sales look like come Christmas. Got Thanksgiving coming up, too. So we'll see. If 750, well, we'll see if millions of black people will not be spending dollars for Thanksgiving and Christmas to interject into the white supremacist economy, supporting slavery and whatnot. We'll see. We'll see. So it's not to take away any constructive information or suggestions that he made. Those constructive suggestions stand on their own. But it is also to point out, I have to point these things out because we got too many people confused about racism and white supremacy. And we don't need them further confused by thinking that Thomas Jefferson was some brilliant man to be admired. He was not. Now, getting back to the last thing I want to share is, you know, Thomas Jefferson kind of, I want to say plagiarized, but then again, I don't know if that's the proper word to describe it. But much of his grand ideals that he wrote about, man, all he did was tweak stuff that had already been said before by other, you know, philosophers and other, and some of the stuff he took from the Magna Carta. Magna Charta, I think I'm pronouncing that right, which was a document produced in Europe about a century or so before Thomas Jefferson, talking about freedom and whatnot, you know, rights of people and whatnot. So some of that came from there. And then this whole notion of a federal republic. This the United States of America at the time when it was a constitutional democratic republic with a strong central government, a federal government, you know, when it was established, it wasn't even the first republic on this land here. It was a republic already here. And I learned this from a hip hop artist, Jossery X, who I played his track earlier. No, it wasn't Jossery X. It was Immortal Technique. I don't know his real name, but Immortal Technique is another underground rapper who is not on the record labels plantation and whatnot. And he produces his own stuff and distributes his own stuff and enough so that he can support himself and his family. But I learned from him that the Iroquois Nation was the first federal government on this continent. I don't know Immortal Technique, because I think the Mississippian Nation was here first before the Iroquois Nation. Maybe we might be talking about the same thing or whatnot. But the Iroquois Federation was a number of indigenous tribes, had their own way of doing things, own distinct, you know, lands and whatnot, and they came together and formed a federation with a strong central federal government. Now, my research is still early on the Mississippian Nation, which was in the area. Well, it stretched from where I am now in western North Carolina to, at certain times, almost across the Rockies. A great swath of this continent was part of the Mississippian Nation, which was a bunch of tribal indigenous people, the Cherokee, the Sioux, I mean, it's just so many different tribes. I don't even know all of them name and stuff, but they all came together. And check this out. Not only did they have a religious institutions, much like they have today, and religion plays such a big part in people's lives, or at least they say they do. Well, it actually does, you know, and that's the problem, is we got too much religion and not enough spirituality and understanding. All right. But they had a religious class in the Mississippian Nation. They had a political class and they also had a middle class, or poor people. And from what I read about the Mississippian Nation is that it started declining because of, guess what? Cause of corruption in the political class and the religious class. And that's began the downfall of the Mississippian Nation that existed here on this continent before USA was ever even thought, before a European ever stepped foot on this continent. A nation existed, and they modeled their nation, this new nation called USA, based on what was already here. Again, they didn't just come here and it was a bunch of trees and forests and you know, they had to chop their way through and build stuff. And no, it was stuff already here. It was already infrastructure here. There were waterways being used to reach distant villages for trade and things of that nature. There were roads, there were paths and whatnot. Again, that's why they got that street named Trade Street in Charlotte, North Carolina. That's why they got the bust of the Indian on the four corners, one of the four corners of Trade Street, acknowledging what was already here, that you didn't come here and there was nothing. You came here and you took over and you built on top of what was already here, what was already established. That ain't being taught to people in school, is it? In their schools. What do they teach you? You know, founding fathers came over here, created something out of nothing, built a great nation. Greatest nation on the face of the planet. That is, until in 1871, they decided to turn it in your republic into a corporation. So that's the history, man. I love history. I owe that to my guy brother that taught me how to read. I don't even know if the brother's still alive or not. It's been so long since I've seen him. But I had a guy brother in Detroit who taught me how to read and write in cursive and whatnot. And I hadn't even started school yet, right? And I have always had a love for reading ever since. And I just read. I read, but I primarily like to read about history and about people. And that, and I ain't got no PhD, and I didn't go to Harvard or any of these schools like that. You know, I attained this knowledge the same way Malcolm X attained knowledge, the same way those inmates, those prisoners of 21st century slavery that was on that debate team, they defeated the people in Harvard. No, man, I just got a thirst for knowledge, and I seek it out. So that's how I know these things. But Minister Faircon, by asking people to do their homework on Thomas Jefferson, I was able to add to that knowledge and find out just how much more vile and despicable and evil this man was than what I originally thought. So thank you, Minister Faircon, for the homework. And yeah. All right, folks, that's the end of the program. Keep checking Black Talk Radio Network on Facebook. We're also on Twitter at Black Talk Radio. If Brother Robin, and I'll check my email, he might have already sent me the program for tonight, the itinerary and whatnot, and I'll get that posted. But Brother Robin does have a scheduled program to come on at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. That's Race Treaty, where they talk about racism and white supremacy from a human rights perspective. Forget civil rights. We want human rights. We don't care about that civil rights stuff. We want our creator given human rights. We want the human rights that is codified in international law and in the documents of the United Nations, its declaration of human rights. That's what we want. We ain't falling for this constitution. We ain't falling for no civil rights or nothing like that. Y'all fooled us one time with that. We gonna do what Malcolm X suggested that we do, and that's view everything from the lens of human rights. All right, following Race Treaty, at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time will be the Lotus Place. So once I know what everyone will be discussing, I will post those to the network, blacktalkradionetwork.com. And of course, anytime I post to the network, it gets distributed to those who follow us, who subscribe to the RSS feed, or who follow us on Facebook and Twitter. All right. Recognize the fact that you live behind enemy lines, just like those people that were at the local Daimler truck plant did. They recognized they live behind enemy lines. They knew it was a battlefield out there. They know we surrounded by racist suspects and white supremacists at every turn. All right. And so they use their battlefield awareness to perhaps, I can't say 100% sure, but perhaps they averted a great terrorist attack on the black people working at that plant. So when you develop battlefield awareness, you can develop battlefield skills, take steps that will decrease the likelihood that you will become a casualty of Americans. All right. Till I come back on air, when will that be? Sunday night, Political Prisoner Radio. Peace and blessings to all, and make sure that you stay safe. Stay safe now behind these enemy lines.
When we see our people being brutalized by white bigots, white racists, we think that they are foolish to allow themselves to be beaten and brutalized and do nothing whatsoever to protect themselves. They are foolish. They should have the right to defend themselves against any attack made against them by anyone. If a dog is biting a black man, the black man should kill the dog. Whether the dog is a police dog, a hound dog, or any kind of dog. If a dog is sicked on a black man, when that black man is doing nothing but trying to take advantage of what the government says is supposed to be his, then that black man should kill that dog or any two-legged dog, two-legged dog, two-legged dog. There will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, as other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves. Then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to, has to bring an end to, has to bring an end to.